pushed in too far, letting your buddies make charges so nutty they lack only feathers and tar. It hurts me to talk to a president this way, but I can't stand those fear-mongering lies. Yeah, you'll wish you'd retired the first time you hear Daddy's October surprise. Yes, he'll take the gloves off. I think he's been too soft on this apocalypse-bound buckaroo who's put us in hock and in awe and in shock.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
And I'm Doug Cunningham.
The Wisconsin AFL-CIO presented a report to journalists Tuesday detailing manufacturing job losses in the state. The study comes on the heels of similar reports in Washington, Ohio, and Pennsylvania. The report finds that between January 2001 and May 2004, 61% of the layoffs by Wisconsin manufacturers were trade-related. Since 2001, 1 in 9 of Wisconsin's manufacturing jobs have disappeared. Milwaukee, the Fox River Valley, and Janesville are areas of the state hit hardest by the current trade policies. Bob Bowe, executive director of the AFL-CIO Industrial Union Council, said that the report is the first ever to rely on publicly reported official data to measure trade-related job losses. He says that the study is powerful evidence that current trade policies are hurting America's working families. Detailed information on job losses in America and which companies are shipping jobs overseas can be found at www.workingamerica.org.
As many as 60,000 students in the Chicago area found a substitute teaching their classes this week as 500 full-time teachers at the 7 Chicago City colleges went on strike. The Cook County College Teachers Union called the strike in response to administrators' efforts to increase their workload by one class per semester and 40 additional students with no overtime pay. The Cook County College Board is also seeking to increase health care costs by 400% and replace full-time teachers hiring more part-time faculty. Union members say they'll continue to walk picket lines until they receive a fair 4-year contract. Outsourcing is a bigger problem in America than first thought. Officially, the Bureau of Labor Statistics says just over 4,600 private sector jobs in companies with 50 or more workers were lost to outsourcing in the first quarter of this year. But two labor experts say the total is really much higher. Stephanie Luce with the University of Massachusetts Amherst and Kate Bronfenbrenner at Cornell say the total is closer to 400,000 jobs by the end of this year. The two prepared a report for a bipartisan congressional group investigating outsourcing. Not only are many more jobs actually being exported, but more white-collar, information tech, and call center jobs are now leaving the country compared to 2001, when most outsourced jobs were blue-collar.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. After 30 years of improvement, leading indicators show a worsening environmental trend over the last 4 years. Statistics show that civil citations issued to polluters fell 57%. Criminal pollution prosecutions dropped 17%. Cleanups of toxic waste down by 52%. Fish consumption warnings for rivers doubled. Beach closing up 26%. Asthma attacks increased by 6%. On the bright side, greenhouse gas emissions were reduced by 0.5%.
You've been listening to WIN, Workers' Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
We were given these ideas that there's weapons of mass destruction, but where are the weapons of mass destruction? They said they were so sure where they were, but where are they? When we were over there, we looked around. I was on an intelligence gathering team. We looked in scientific installations. We never found anything. And it was just a lie. And that wasn't a proper use of American troops. That wasn't a proper use of my life or my friends' lives or the Marines who I've seen die around me. It's not a proper use.
Move On Pack is responsible for the content of this advertisement.
Am I the only one who wants to say to Donald Trump, please, Donnie, please take your orange-dyed, bad comb-over hairdo and your grotesquely inflated ego and go away? The Donald, as he likes to be known, is the self-promoting high society celebrity who vamps shamelessly as a hard-nosed CEO on the reality TV show called The Apprentice. He also has a book out called Trump, How to Get Rich. In both the show and the book, Donnie poses as a very rich, successful businessman. He is rich, but he didn't get there himself. Instead, he got rich the old-fashioned way. He inherited a New York City real estate fortune from his daddy. And as for being a business success, you might want to ask investors in his struggling casino empire about that. Trump Hotels and Casino Resorts is the one business venture that he launched on his own, his claim to corporate success. It's crumbling. Worse, it's about to crash. Only 2 weeks after signing a new contract with NBC to pose as a business mogul on The Apprentice for another season, his real-life corporation announced a quarterly loss of $49 million. Indeed, Trump Hotels has never been profitable in its decade-long history, and it is stuck so deeply in some $2 billion of debt that Trump's own auditors say there is substantial doubt about whether it can survive. Donnie says it's not his fault. This has nothing to do with me, he whined. Yoo-hoo, your Trumpness, you're the CEO and chairman of the board. Investors and analysts lay the blame squarely at the Donald's feet, accusing him of ineffective management, slipshod financial practices, and a lack of competitive business vision. From his own board members and creditors, the CEO is about to hear the trademark phrase he uses on his TV show, you're fired. This is Jim Hightower saying, it couldn't happen to a more deserving guy. What a fraud.
I have these nightmares. This taco, not just an ordinary taco, but this big evil taco is haunting me.
Guacamole.
You see, I was exposed to credit cards in college, and I wasn't the most responsible person back then.
Go, go, go!
I mean, I heard the words credit card and thought, hey, hey, free money! Plane ticket to spring break? Credit card. New skis? Credit card. 135 taco dinners? Bam! Credit card. But hey, it's not too late to do something about your credit. Get Score Power from Equifax.com. Score Power gives you your credit report, credit score, and it puts you on the road toward the credit you deserve for just $14.95. So, check out Equifax.com today and get that taco you ate 7 years ago out of your life.
Get Score Power at Equifax.com or 1-877-4-EQUIFAX. That's EQUIFAX. Equifax.
Adios, taco.
Get the power. Score Power at Equifax.com.
Calling for a rapid and radical return to the old values that made America great, the values of democracy on which this country was founded, here's Tom Hartman.
And greetings, friends, patriots, lovers of democracy, truth and justice, believers in peace, freedom, and the American way. Tom Hartman here with you, broadcasting live coast to coast on terrestrial radio stations from California to North Carolina, beaming down from outer space on the Sirius satellite radio system, and streaming around the planet on radiopower.org. With archives at White Rose Society and TomHartman.com, our chat room filling up. You can drop in there, go to TomHartman.com and click on live chat. Our number 1-866-889-8894 if you'd like to participate today. A couple of quotes for the day. President Andrew Jackson in 1830, his annual address to Congress. In this point of the case, the question is distinctly presented whether the people of the United States are to govern through representatives chosen by their unbiased suffrages, that is in votes, or whether the money and power of a great corporation are to be secretly exerted to influence their judgment and control their decisions. The president who followed him, Martin Van Buren, spoke to Congress in 1838, said, I am more than ever convinced of the dangers to which the free and unbiased exercise of political opinion, the only sure foundation and safeguard of Republican government, would be exposed by any further increase of the already overgrown influence of corporate authorities. In 18... 1894, Grover Cleveland, President of the United States. As we view the achievements of aggregated capital, we discover the existence of trust combinations of monopolies, while the citizen is struggling far in the rear, is trampled to death beneath an iron heel. Corporations, which should be the carefully restrained creatures of the law and the servants of the people, are fast becoming the people's masters. And now we have Kerry Houston, Vice President of Policy with the Frontiers of Freedom Group, also serves on the board of directors of GOP USA, asserting, Kerry, if I get this right, that Sinclair Broadcasting has a corporate right to free speech?
Yeah, I think so. I think everybody has a right to free speech. That's basically my overall position. However, today, Tom, they've backed off a little bit for what I think is a very interesting reason on running the Stolen Honor program.
And that is?
Well, they've decided that with some pressure, they've decided that they are going to not air the film Stolen Honor, which is a film that the POWs have put out on how John Kerry made their life miserable when they were in the Hanoi Hilton and various other unpleasant hotels in North Vietnam. Instead, they're going to air something called a POW story, Politics, Pressure, and the Media, which I guess is going to be sort of a compilation of Stolen Honor, maybe some interviews from the POWs and some media clips.
They're slicing and dicing this thing and turning it into a phony news event so that they can get around campaign finance laws. But let's get back to this original point. You think that even though the word corporation does not exist in the Constitution, even though corporations are you know, separate, they're not living entities. They can live forever, corporations. They're not subject to inheritance laws. They can't marry. They don't have the right to marry. That corporations have constitutional rights? They have constitutional right of free speech?
A corporation isn't like a blob on the pavement. A corporation is basically a compilation of the stakeholders, the shareholders, the board of directors, and the employees.
A corporation is a legal entity. It exists only in
that,
the abstract.
It's not operated in the abstract. It's operated by human beings just like everything else, like the 527s and all the think tanks and all the advocacy.
I'm not suggesting that human beings shouldn't be able to speak freely. In fact, although we the people have passed this legislation, the McCain-Feingold Act, that says any one of us human beings who wants to contribute to a political campaign is limited to $2,000 each. This Sinclair Broadcasting's contribution here is going to be significantly more than $2,000, don't you think?
Well, yeah. And it works both ways. I mean, Fahrenheit 9/11, whether you agree or disagree with the premises and the stories within Fahrenheit 9/11, I mean, that is definitely a political statement.
Absolutely,
and
absolutely. And it was never broadcast on the public airwaves.
Say it again, Tom?
Fahrenheit 9/11 was not broadcast on the public airwaves. I had to pay to go see that thing.
No, it wasn't broadcast on the public airwaves.
So here we have the commons. Here we have something that we all collectively own together, the commons, the air that we breathe, the water that we drink, the electromagnetic spectrum. And this is our property, we the people. You don't think it's reasonable and appropriate that we have some
control? Well, you know what? You don't have to turn on your TV and watch it. And I'll tell you something else. Sinclair is a private company. PBS is not. PBS is supported by individuals, but also they get huge amounts of money just from the taxpayer pool. And they aired a program a couple of weeks ago on Frontline that was just so tremendously pro-Kerry and anti-Bush that it was almost laughable. And that's the government. That's everybody. There's no such thing as government.
Well,
money.
You're making a great point, Kerry. If that's the government, then we the people have something to say about that, and we can speak out. But we the people don't own Sinclair Broadcasting. And yet Sinclair Broadcasting owns it, and
here's the interesting thing about why they decided not to air this program. They have decided not to air the program in its entirety because the quote-unquote shareholder pressure. Now, the shareholder pressure came from the New York comptroller, who's a guy named Alan Havisi, I hope I'm saying that right, who is a self-avowed Democrat, which is fine. And he sent a letter to Sinclair, a copy of which AP obtained, and he talks about how he's worried about the shareholders losing money because there's problems with Sinclair's value in the corporate world, and he is concerned about the New York State Common Retirement Fund. There's another guy out in San Diego who's complaining that the SEIU, Greater New York Pension Fund, is going to get hurt if Sinclair airs this program and its stock drops. Now, what's interesting about that is the unions are very much an interest group that supports John Kerry and supports the Democratic Party, which is fine. I'm in favor of intellectual and ideological honesty all day long. So the question is, you've got now unions through government employees putting pressure on a private corporation not to air something that would hurt the candidate they support. So how, what, you know, where's the honesty in that? Like, at least stand up and say where you're standing in the middle of the street.
So let me get this straight. It sounds to me, Kerry, like what you're saying is that Sinclair Broadcasting, which controls a huge chunk of the media and a large chunk in a large portion of the United States, somewhere between 25% and 40% of Americans can watch television stations owned by Sinclair, that this corporation, because they're bowing in some small way to shareholder pressure, is the equivalent of a democratic institution?
No, that's not what I said.
Okay,
at all.
So they're not a democratic institution. So
should what I said was they're getting pressure from the state of New York and a guy in San Diego, both of whom represent the interests
so
of
what?
Two pension groups. The pension groups are controlled and more or
so
less...
What does that have to do with whether or not they have rights of free speech? I don't understand. I don't get it.
No, there's two different issues. The free speech is one issue. What I'm talking about now is the pressure that Sinclair has been under.
What's the
now,
significance
of that?
I'm
in favor of shareholder pressure. I mean, if a bunch of shareholders... who are a lot of what, you know, 50% of shareholders are just little old ladies and little old men all over the country that own stock. I mean, they should have some concerns about what a corporate entity does if it affects their dividends.
Actually,
Kerry,
I'm sorry to burst your balloon, but according to the United States government, statistics, about 1% of our population owns about 90% of the total wealth in the United States.
Well,
there are a lot of people
one.
Who own stock, but you know, in 401ks and things, and by and large, it's insignificant compared to the stock owned by the top 1%.
Now, going back to the original issue,
but what you're putting forth is this you know, very common conservative argument that somehow corporations are like democratic institutions because you can buy a share of stock and you can have your voice, and the logical extension of that, of course, is the conservative worldview position that those who have the most money should have the greatest right to free speech. I mean, isn't that the bottom line? Isn't that what you're suggesting?
No, maybe we should have a discussion about what's a liberal and what's a conservative.
Sure.
Want to go there?
Sure. Edmund Burke, who is the founder of modern conservative thought, quoted by Russell Russell Kirk in his 1943 book, The Conservative Mind, which William F. Buckley, who I've interviewed, and Barry Goldwater, who I worked for, say was the foundation of their thinking. Russell Kirk quoting Edmund Burke saying, "It does me no harm if a person engages in such a servile profession as being a hairdresser. However, it does great violence to society if such persons are allowed to participate in governance."
Exactly.
Russell Kirk lays it out in The Conservative Mind. He says, one of the five tenets of conservative thought is the idea that there are orders and classes in society. There's a natural hierarchy in society.
Well, not the conservatism I adhere to, and certainly not the conservatism all my colleagues adhere to. What we believe is individual liberty, individual operations of free speech, and the ability of companies, teeny tiny little companies owned by one little guy, and really big companies to employ lots of other people so that they can be, you know, they can be successful and happy in their lives as well. So,
you know, Kerry, I absolutely agree with you. And how do we...
In favor of jobs, basically.
Me too. And how do we, the people, and we who are small business people, I don't know if you are, I am, we who are entrepreneurs, how do we protect ourselves from predators in our society if we don't have some sort of a social contract that says collectively we, the people, are going to define at least the rules of the game of business?
Well, you know, look at Enron, which is one of the favorite boy toys of the liberal left. Enron was brought down by individuals. It wasn't the government that did it.
Enron was brought down by its own rot.
Pardon me?
Enron was brought down by its own rot.
Oh, yeah, absolutely its own rot. But its own rot was pointed out by individuals. Same with Tyco and a number of these corporate scandals. It wasn't the government going in there and complaining and whining about its misbehavior. It was individuals. So I think that shows the power of the individual, and it shows the power of somebody with a big mouth and a good conscience, which I think is sort of the backbone of, you know, how we succeed here in the U.S. as people with backbones and big mouths who are willing to take a stand.
So what you're saying is, what you're saying is that if a huge corporation is engaging in abuses that are destructive to democracy, that are going to wipe out people's pension funds, that are polluting the planet, that are spinning elections in a way that's going to inure to their economic benefit, as in the case of Sinclair, that's just fine because we little people, you and me, we may have an opportunity to speak up and we might get heard. And occasionally, from time to time, we might bring down one of these behemoths.
Well, sometimes life is kind of crummy, but you and I would be totally differing in our views that corporations are inherently evil.
I'm not saying they're inherently evil. I think corporations are great. I run one. I've started a bunch of corporations.
I wish I did. I just struggle with one of those poor little nonprofit think tanks, and I'm always supporting capitalism for others.
Here's my point, Carrie. Here's my point. Corporations are fine. Free enterprise is fine. As long as it's a game. I mean, business is a game. Bucky Fuller said, you know, a corporation is legally enacted game plan, and I think it's probably one of the best definitions of what the corporate form is. A corporation comes into existence by virtue of a Secretary of State saying, yes, you may be a corporation. And we, the people, collectively say, and here are the rules by which you have to play. What is wrong with that? What is wrong with saying, if you're going to play the game of business, you're going to have to do it first in a way that inures some benefit to society? And, Carrie, we've got only about 30 seconds left. I'll give you the final word on this.
Well, yeah, I like what you're saying. You're kind of defining freedom, aren't you? I mean, a corporation has freedom to bring economic prosperity.
Then what if one of the rules of the game that we say is, hey, if you're gonna play this anti-carry thing, you got to play a pro-carry thing too.
Well, let them do it then, if you can find one.
Okay. Well, actually, there is one. It's Going Upriver. It's a marvelous movie about the exact same point in time and the exact same events. But anyhow, Carrie Houston, Vice President of Policy, Frontiers of Freedom. Carrie, is there a website real quick?
Absolutely. FF.org.
FF.org. Thanks a lot, Carrie, for being with us. I appreciate it.
Thank you, Tom. Bye-bye.
Bye now. 20 minutes past the hour.
I guess I better let the dog in.
Like the small dog that rules the house, Small Dog Electronics is the small computer company that really rules when it comes to customer service. Small Dog Electronics is your authorized Apple reseller in Wakefield, Vermont. Sure, you can buy your computer out of a catalog, but how do you know you're really getting what you want or what you need? At Small Dog, they don't work on commission. Their only motivation is making sure you're a happy customer. Put your business on the leading edge with the world's fastest computer, the new Macintosh G5. You'll finish the job ahead of the pack, and automatic security updates lock out viruses. That's speed and dependability that will keep you focused on your customers instead of sitting on hold with tech support.
I guess you want to get on the couch, huh?
Like the small dog who everybody makes room for, Small Dog Electronics is big on customer service. Small Dog Electronics. Check them out on the web at smalldog.com or at their showroom on Route 100 in Waitsfield.
No way. You're not getting on the bed.
Visit iowapeace.com for books on justice and peace. The Last Liberal Outlaw is Mike Palasek's new novel. Chuck Gregory with BlueEar.com had this to say. Palasek is at his best when writing about small-town America. It's a place he clearly loves, even as he pokes fun at its quirks and reveals the sickness that lies just below the surface. It's a place he knows, and he shares his knowledge in delightfully original ways, even as he cries out for change. We haven't had a writer like Palasek since Kurt Vonnegut was at his peak. Mike is an Iowa author, former federal prisoner for peace, small-town newspaper reporter, seminarian, and nominee for the U.S. House of Representatives in the Iowa Democratic Party 2000 election. For more information and more about Mike's other novels, visit iowapeace.com. The revolution won't be televised, but you can read about it. The Last Liberal Outlaw, A New American Revolution, is happening in the heartland.
Hi, I'm David Orrick. In vacuums, bagless is a dirty word. In fact, they're filthy. A leading consumer testing magazine warns, if you're sensitive to dust, avoid bagless vacuums. My newest hypoallergenic 8-pound Orrick XL uses triple-wall disposable filter bags. Try my new vacuum free for 30 days. Call 1-800-989-4200, 1-800-989-4200. Orrick, the clean alternative to bagless vacuum.
For more than 27 years, the Progressive magazine In These Times has provided groundbreaking coverage of movements for social, environmental, and economic justice. Author and broadcast personality Studs Terkel calls In These Times his bi-weekly tonic. In These Times features award-winning reporting and analysis of national and international news. Find In These Times on your newsstand or visit us online at www.inthesetimes.com or call 1-800-827-0270. 1-800-827-0270.
The following phone call was not recorded on February 30th, 2004.
Thank you for calling about DirecTV. My name is Lynn. How can I help you?
Thank you, sir. Thank goodness you're there. You've got to help me. My cable company is raising their rates again. I don't know what I'm going to do.
It's okay, ma'am. I'm here to help. I'm glad you called.
They're taking away our favorite channels and charging more. It's just wrong.
Ma'am, I get that all the time. Let me help you right away. Would you like to get over 125 channels of your favorite programming for only $39.99?
Will I still be able to get my local channels?
Absolutely. And because you called American Satellite right now, you can get up to a four-room DirecTV system for free and free professional installation for all new customers with an annual programming commitment.
Oh, thank you. My husband, Nick, is going to be so happy.
Call American Satellite at 1-800-505-1542. That's 800-505-1542. Call now and ask how you can get total choice for only $29.99 a month for the first 6 months. A $60 value. 800-505-1542. At $4.99 a month per second in each additional receiver. Offer ends July 17, 2004. Call.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Everybody's grinning in my face, telling me I gotta make a change.
And welcome back. Yes, we do have to make a change. November 2nd, time to make the change. Don't forget, get out there and vote. Find five people that you can drive to the polls. Get active. It's time for us to take our country back. Speaking of taking our country back, speaking of the large situations that we're facing, some of the real issues of our day. Michael Taylor is here. In fact, I'm only doing the first hour of the program today. Rama Schneider is going to be filling in for me in the second and third hour of our program because we're filming a movie. And Michael Taylor is down here. He's the president of Stonehaven Productions, which produced a movie called The Great Warming, which broadcast all across Canada. He's also produced Secrets of the Last Glaciers. His most recent focus has involved climate change and rapid climate change. And you're working on a movie for PBS right here, right now, right, Michael?
Yeah, we hope to have the show on in April 2005. And I think it'll be somewhere around Earth Day, but lots of promo.
Yeah, great. And what, Michael, you need to just get a little...
Tom signaled me to move in or
something. Yeah, you got
to
eat that mic there.
I'm going to eat this
right
mic
on top
now,
of it.
So there you go, folks.
I know that you've been traveling literally all over the world, talking to some of the world's top scientists about global climate change and rapid climate change. What's the most alarming and perhaps the most interesting thing or things that you've discovered?
Well, I think the most alarming is that is not so much the changes themselves, but the reluctance of great parts of the public, particularly in this country, to accept that those changes are happening. The changes are mild year over year. The changes in the climate, despite the fact that there are some violent storms, but that year over year the changes are not that dramatic. But boy, when they start taking effect, let me give you one quick example.
Yeah, please.
Agriculture, for example, if the average temperature of the world rises about 1 degree, which is on the sort of the conservative projection of all the world's great scientists, if it rises 1 degree, the world's rice crop will drop by 10%. Now, the world's rice crop feeds 30% of the entire world.
Wow.
I mean, that's a huge... You start thinking, my Lord, 10% drop in food.
We're talking famine. Massive famine.
You're talking massive famine. And I think probably the agricultural implications are as bad as any. People worry about the big storms. What's the next big storm going to do to Florida? Well, that's serious and that's financial, but that doesn't come close to killing off 10% of one of the major food elements in the world.
Yeah, yeah, it's remarkable. Now, I have traveled around the world. You're actually a resident of another country, and there doesn't seem to be the reluctance to address global climate change. I was in the UK a couple of years ago. It was in October or November, and they were having 60-mile-an-hour gale-force winds they'd never had before that month. I think it was November. I mean, just, you know, it was wild landing at Heathrow.
Yeah.
I was in Australia during the big fires that were approaching Sydney. In both cases, the news reporters were simply reporting this as a consequence of global climate change. They're saying, you know, as a result of global warming, we're having, you know, and it was just, you know, hey, this is it. Here in the United States, no reporter would dare say such a thing. Why is that?
I'm darned if I know. I mean, that's one of the things that we're trying to find out.
Well, what are you hearing from people as you interview them?
Well, the scientists are...
We've got about a minute.
The scientists are frustrated. People say, well, maybe scientists should stick to science and leave policy to others. But the scientists are speaking out. They're starting to voice their concerns. Tom, I don't know what's going on in this country, but change is going to happen soon.
Yeah, you're seeing just like denial in the United States, or is it more like fear?
Denial in, I was interviewing some farmers in Nebraska, guys who use science, very sophisticated farmers, but these guys don't believe that global climate change is happening. They say, well, no, it's not. It just doesn't exist. It's a figment of, and they blame the government, and of course the environmentalists blame the government for not recognizing
it. Those nasty environmentalists.
Well, I don't know, but these are bright guys.
Yeah.
But they just say it's not happening.
Yeah.
I'd hate to start talking about why they think it isn't happening. But.
Yeah, this is strange times we live in. This is going to be one of the great issues of our time. I am absolutely convinced. Yeah. Michael Taylor of Stonehaven Productions. Thank you, Michael. Okay. It's the Tom Hartman Radio Program, exposing the con and conservatives. Stick around. We'll be right back.
Hi, I'm David Orrick. Talk about unsanitary. A leading consumer testing magazine warns, if you're sensitive to dust, avoid bagless vacuums or wear a dust mask. Imagine vacuuming your house wearing a dust mask? Friends, try my hypoallergenic 8-pound Orrick XL free for 30 days. It's 99.99% dust-free. Call 1-800-989-4200. 1-800-989-4200.
Pop and not-so-pop culture, democracy, and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
And I'm Doug Cunningham.
The Wisconsin AFL-CIO presented a report to journalists Tuesday detailing manufacturing job losses in the state. The study comes on the heels of similar reports in Washington, Ohio, and Pennsylvania. The report finds that between January 2001 and May 2004, 61% of the layoffs by Wisconsin manufacturers were trade-related. Since 2001, 1 in 9 of Wisconsin's manufacturing jobs have disappeared. Milwaukee, the Fox River Valley, and Janesville are areas of the state hit hardest by the current trade policies. Bob Bowe, executive director of the AFL-CIO Industrial Union Council, said that the report is the first ever to rely on publicly reported official data to measure trade-related job losses. He says that the study is powerful evidence that current trade policies are hurting America's working families. Detailed information on job losses in America and which companies are shipping jobs overseas can be found at www.workingamerica.org.
As many as 60,000 students in the Chicago area found a substitute teaching their classes this week as 500 full-time teachers at the 7 Chicago City colleges went on strike. The Cook County College Teachers Union called the strike in response to administrators' efforts to increase their workload by one class per semester and 40 additional students with no overtime pay. The Cook County College Board is also seeking to increase health care costs by 400% and replace full-time teachers hiring more part-time faculty. Union members say they'll continue to walk picket lines until they receive a fair 4-year contract. Outsourcing is a bigger problem in America than first thought. Officially, the Bureau of Labor Statistics says just over 4,600 private sector jobs in companies with 50 or more workers were lost to outsourcing in the first quarter of this year. But two labor experts say the total is really much higher. Stephanie Luce with the University of Massachusetts Amherst and Kate Bronfenbrenner at Cornell say the total is closer to 400,000 jobs by the end of this year. The two prepared a report for a bipartisan congressional group investigating outsourcing. Not only are many more jobs actually being exported, but more white-collar, information tech, and call center jobs are now leaving the country compared to 2001, when most outsourced jobs were blue-collar.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. After 30 years of improvement, leading indicators show a worsening environmental trend over the last 4 years. Statistics show that civil citations issued to polluters fell 57%. Criminal pollution prosecutions dropped 17%. Cleanups of toxic waste down by 52%. Fish consumption warnings for rivers doubled. Beach closing up 26%. Asthma attacks increased by 6%. On the bright side, greenhouse gas emissions were reduced by 0.5%.
You've been listening to WIND, Workers' Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
You want to get it, you got to go to the polls. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. 27 minutes before the hour. And we're going to get back to talking with Michael Taylor here in a few minutes. If you have comments, concerns, arguments, thoughts, 1-866-889-8894. I know a few people had called in the earlier part of the program when we were talking with Kerry and with Michael and... I had asked Ira to just postpone the calls because I wanted to get through that thing with Kerry in particular. Isn't it amazing? Isn't it just absolutely amazing? The conservatives can just blindly go, it's fine that corporations should have human rights. They should have the First Amendment right of free speech. They should have Fourth Amendment privacy rights. Who cares what damage is done to democracy? It just boggles my mind. I really truly think that folks like this woman who was on the program earlier are, good people who are just misguided. I mean, I really don't. People have believed this right wing rhetoric, have been hearing so much of it for so long, particularly on right wing talk radio, and it's so selective in its presentation of reality, and it's so good at overlooking the social contract, the one of the foundational ideas of this country, the social contract, the idea that we are all in this together. And that while, yes, freedom and individual liberties are a wonderful thing, and the only thing that guarantees freedom and individual liberties is a society that facilitates it. You can't have all or nothing. You can't just say, oh, yes, it's just, the rugged individualist. It doesn't work. Now we've got, and this woman was, of course, promoting the Sinclair's right to run this anti-John Kerry documentary. Now, a veteran of the new film, this from the New York Times, critical of Senator John Kerry's anti-Vietnam War activism, is suing the producer of the movie, saying it libels him by deceptively editing his statements. Mr. Campbell, a decorated Marine, Kenneth J. Campbell, now a professor at the University of Delaware, says the film was edited to take out footage in which Mr. Campbell made clear that only soldiers who witnessed the atrocities firsthand would be allowed to testify at the hearings, and footage in which he recounted his military superiors ordering him to kill innocent civilians. And he said, his lawyer, David Kerry, says, quote, it edits little clips to make it look like they're just making up instances. And, of course, they're also going to continue the big lie that the Republican Party is promoting, which is that John Kerry was saying that he had witnessed these atrocities, when instead, in fact, he had called a hearing. They had vetted 150 soldiers who had confessed to these kinds of war crimes. And their goal was to indict not the soldiers. In fact, the soldiers were their comrades, their friends in this, but to indict Nixon and Kissinger for putting these people in this position. As this is the part that you're not going to hear on Sinclair Broadcasting, those of you who live in Sinclair cities, that precedes the quote where John Kerry talks about, and they told us about, cutting off limbs and blowing up babies and blah, blah, blah. This is how it starts.
Months ago in Detroit, we had an investigation at which over 150 honorably discharged and many very highly decorated veterans testified to war crimes committed in Southeast Asia. Not isolated incidents, but crimes committed on a day-to-day basis with a full awareness of officers at all levels of command. It's impossible to describe to you exactly what did happen in Detroit, the emotions in the room, the feelings of the men who were reliving their experiences in Vietnam. But they did.
And then he wraps it up, by the way.
The term Winter Soldier is a play on words of Thomas Paine's in 1776 when he spoke of the sunshine patriot and summertime soldiers who deserted at Valley Forge because the going was rough. And we who've come here to Washington have come here because we feel we have to be winter soldiers now. We could come back to this country and we could be quiet. We could hold our silence. We could not tell what went on in Vietnam. But we feel because of what threatens this country, the fact that the crimes threaten it, not reds and not redcoats, but the crimes which we're committing are what threaten it. And we have to speak out.
They're taking what I believe to be one of the great acts of heroism of John Kerry's career and trying to turn it into something evil. And this is immoral. These people are behaving like some kind of pond scum. I mean, this is reprehensible, absolutely reprehensible. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. Chuck in Los Alamos, New Mexico, on the line. Hey, Chuck, welcome to the program.
Hey, Tom. You know, I absolutely agree with you. It's beyond reprehensible. And the thing that I find most fascinating about your first guest is this. The woman came right out and said she doesn't have a corporation. She works for a nonprofit. What would motivate someone who is not fiscally motivated to have the opinion of the rights of corporations that she claims to hold? I just find that fascinating.
Well, I think it's two things, Chuck. I think, number one, there are real ideologues out there. There are people who have been listening to Limbaugh all these years and actually believe the right-wing line that he's been shoveling at them. And they haven't bothered, as she, obviously, she said, well, let's talk about what conservative means. And I said, okay, fine, I know what conservative means.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden, hey, here's the history of it. And she's like, whoa, I didn't know that. So, number one, there are ideologues, people who are misguided believers. Also, the other point is that, you know, many of these right-wing think tanks are very well funded by very wealthy families and large corporations, and they pay pretty good. And, you know,
So in other words, basically,
nothing wrong with a paycheck.
Yeah, so in other words, basically, it all comes down to money at this stage of the game.
I think in many cases it does. Chuck,
yeah,
thanks for the call. Good hearing from you. I appreciate it. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. Michael, in Canada, how are the Canadians perceiving this circus here in the United States?
I think circus is probably the right word, but we're kind of a quiet, gentle folk up there, and we don't want to disturb you down here in your hornet's nest. So I'm going to beg off that. I know that we all
have. Well, I'm not asking you to take a political position.
No,
I just wonder.
We all have one.
Yeah.
You could probably imagine what it is, because the government in power in Canada, and has been for many years, is the Liberal government. So.
Liberal in the American sense of the word, as opposed to the European sense.
In the liberal and European, yes.
Yeah, as opposed to, like, liberal...
it's both.
Yeah. 1-866-889-8894, telephone number. Keith in North Carolina on the line. Hey, Keith, welcome to the program.
Hey, Tom, how are you doing today?
Great, what's up?
Hey, I got a question. When Kerry, on this last debate, you could tell that he hit a nerve with Bush when he asked him about Osama bin Laden. And
yep.
He said that he wasn't concerned about him anymore. And Bush came back and said, well, that must be a figment of your imagination.
No, he said that's an exaggeration. You know.
Well, all the networks afterwards all showed, when he made that speech, that he said that he wasn't concerned.
Yeah.
How can this be the terrorist president that fights against terrorism when all he's doing is letting one of the biggest terrorists go?
Well, and 9/11 happened on his watch. And when they first came into office, Sandy Berger and Bill Clinton and Al Gore told their respective peers, Condi Rice, George W. Bush, and Dick Cheney, Osama bin Laden is going to be the number one problem that you're facing. It's going to be at the top of your plate. And so they appointed Dick Cheney to be head of the Anti-Terrorism Task Force and the Energy Task Force, and the Anti-Terrorism Task Force never once met before 9/11. And, right. You know, this thing happened on their watch, and I'm just amazed that they have been able to wiggle out from having or being held responsible for it or holding any responsibility for it. Thanks a lot, Keith, for the call. Good point you make. 1-866-889-8894. Daniel in Indiana on the line. Hey, Daniel, welcome to the program.
Hi, this is Danielle. But
Danielle.
That's okay. I have a question. I studied broadcasting in college, and there was, you know, the equal time for each candidate.
Yes, that was up until 1987.
They're having to do that with this, or since it's not a commercial, is he doesn't have to?
Well, you're talking about the Fairness Doctrine, and the Fairness Doctrine was an FCC rule that was first put into place in either the late 30s or early 1940s. Frankly, I don't remember which. In large part in response to a radio preacher by the name of Father Coughlin, who 30 to 40 million people used to listen to every week, and started going into these anti-Roosevelt rants and pro-Nazi and anti-Semitic, you know, and finally Congress said enough is enough. The Fairness Doctrine had to be renewed from year to year. In 1987, the Congress passed a renewal of the Fairness Doctrine, which said that if you're going to use the commercial airwaves and you allow one side to speak, you have to give the other side equal time. And okay. President Ronald Reagan vetoed it. His veto in 1987 of the Fairness Doctrine was the last we've seen of it. So now broadcast, and of course that paved the way for the rise of right-wing talk radio. And so,
right.
and left-wing talk radio for that matter, and here I am, you know, me and three other guys right out here, men and women, let's say. Anyhow.
Well, I think it's great, but.
Yeah, well, thank you.
Because it gets everybody's viewpoint out, but, you know, I just didn't think they could logically do that, and I was listening to another show last night who said that somebody has offered to buy time sandwiching between it to take up, you know, the other side.
Yeah. Well, see, they shouldn't have to. I mean, this goes beyond the Fairness Doctrine because we're 2 weeks out from a presidential campaign, and
right.
This is about one of the presidential candidates. And we, you know, the McCain-Feingold law basically very narrowly defines how corporations can participate, how they can be involved, you know, what sort of donations they can make, what kind of donations individuals can make, and what constitutes political speech. The problem is that I think it's pretty clear to everybody and their brother that Sinclair is breaking the law here. The problem is that they won't be prosecuted for it until after the election, so they'll get away with the crime. And if Bush gets elected, see, they have big bucks on at stake here. They want to buy a whole bunch more television stations, and right now the law prevents them from doing that. And Bush has basically said that if he gets elected, he's going to let them do it. He's going to work in a way that's going to work to the benefit of Sinclair. So, I mean, this is we are seeing corruption writ large. This goes way beyond journalism school ethics and standards. This has to do. Yeah, this has to do with the behavior of a corporation trying to manipulate the political process of the United States. And in my opinion, it's a crime. These people, their corporate charter should be pulled. They should be put out of business.
I think so, too.
Thanks for the call, Danielle.
I agree.
I appreciate
yeah.
it. Good to hear okay. from you. Thanks. 1-866-889-8894. Armin in Sarasota, Florida on the line. Hey, Armin, your thoughts on this.
Laws and rules make you and me and the people that listen to your show responsible.
I disagree. I think we're responsible to begin with,
But I mean, ultimately, the parameters. We respect the parameters of rules and laws. And corporations, Tom, are made up of people. And corporations have far more potential to do devastation to society as a whole than individuals. So why should anybody, in any logical sense, say that corporations should be less accountable than people and individuals when they're made up of people and individuals and their decisions can be much more dramatically negative to society.
Absolutely, and well said, Armin. I absolutely agree with you, and you said it as well as I could. And something, you know, that I say regularly, a corporation is legally enacted game plan. It's a wonderful thing. It's a great way to organize capital to make money. It's a good thing to make a living. It's a we need the corporate form in our country, but not at the risk of democracy. Not at the risk of the destruction of the middle class. And these are very real problems. 1-866-889-8894. Dave in Columbus, Ohio on the line. Hey, Dave, welcome to the program.
Hey, Tom, how you doing today?
Great, but I'll get better. What's up, Dave?
Excellent. Hey, I just wanted to ask you the question. How is it that you only complain about the corporate irresponsibility in news broadcasting when it affects your guy?
Give me an example of a corporation. I don't see ABC running Fahrenheit 9/11.
Well, how about all the NBC's Nightline doing every single book review of anti-Bush for the last 6 months, but
come on,
never interviewing anybody from the other side.
David, you know, I'm sorry. If you're going to trot out this, the liberal bias of the media, I mean, you know, go to fair.org and check it out. I mean, Bernard Goldberg has his head so far. I'm sorry, you're wrong. Of course I'm biased. This is talk radio, Dave.
Yeah, and that's okay. It is okay.
I'm not pretending not to be biased, and I don't own 63 television stations where people have to watch what I say.
Right,
you know what I'm broadcasting.
Sinclair is not saying that. I don't think that they're saying that they're not doing this for any other reason than these guys that have been interviewed and they put out this thing.
Come on, Dave. Are you trying to tell me that Sinclair is not doing this because they've got a financial stake in the outcome of this? Are you that naive?
I'm not naive to think that they don't.
You think that Sinclair has no financial stake in this, and they're not doing this.
I think that they absolutely do, but so does Viacom. And you don't complain about them because they're hitting George Bush.
I don't see it. I'm sorry, Dave. I just don't see it.
Same thing.
I don't see it. Name one hour long attack program on George Bush.
If you were doing the same thing on both sides, but you're not.
Okay. Well, I'm not then. Dave, call me back when you've got one specific hour long attack on George Bush, and I would love to hear about it. 1-866-889-8894. Our taxi driver number 12 in Santa Fe, New Mexico. Hey, number 12, what's up?
To hell with McCain-Feingold. I'm sick of it. There's no provision in the First Amendment that says, you know, you have to regulate speech and you can't say certain things 60 days before an election. And as far as this goes, yeah, run all the propaganda films on broadcast TV. Run, you know, Michael Moore's thing. Run the, Carrie's Wonderful movie. Run the Carrie's Awful movie. It's just all propaganda.
You know, number 12, if all media was owned by local people who had to answer to the local community, I'd totally agree with you. I'd be right there totally agreeing with you. But when you've got a corporation that owns all these broadcasts, all these TV stations, and that corporation is deciding that they're going to air something that's overtly political. I mean, at least, you know, Clear Channel, for example, has stayed out of this stuff. I mean, they're into programming. But here you've got Sinclair saying, no, we're going to take a political advocacy position. That, I think, is wrong. 10 minutes before the hour, Tom Hartman with you.
Bonjour, my name is Michel, and I founded the Organic Wine Company with my sister 25 years ago. If you love wine and have not tried our French wines yet, you are in for a treat. Nowadays, people everywhere are buying organic fruits and vegetables because they know they taste better. Organic grapes are so luscious that when turned into wine, you can really taste the difference. Our wines are delicious and eco-friendly. So I want to make it very easy for you to try them out. Call me right away at 1-888-ECO-WINE and I will send you 3 of my favorite organic French wines at half their regular price. That's just $25 plus shipping. C'est magnifique! And if you don't agree, I will gladly refund your money. So take me up on my offer and call me right away at 1-888-ECO-WINE, which is ECOWINE. Au revoir!
Now, it's time for This Billionaire Moment.
A criminal investigation is underway over Halliburton's $180 million payment to Nigerian officials for a natural gas project back when Dick Cheney was the CEO. Critics call this bribery, but in many countries, bribes are just part of the political culture. Why should Dick's company be punished for being sensitive to local customs? You give money to politicians and they give favors to you. We do it all the time here in the U.S., only we call it a campaign contribution, and no one seems to object. South of the border, it's la mordita, the little bite, and in the Middle East, it's bakshish. No matter what you call it, it's smart business. I'm Xenophobe for This Billionaire Moment.
This Billionaire Moment is brought to you by BillionairesForBush.com.
Here come the billionaires!
We the people now face a fundamental choice. Take back our government or do nothing and become the victims of tyranny and empire.
That is the message in a revealing new book by Tom Hartman, We the People, A Call to Take Back America. Fully illustrated by Neil Cohn, We the People takes a hard look at America's past, present, and future. You'll find out that the Patriot Act is not unique. In 1798, President John Adams pushed the Alien and Sedition Act through a Federalist Congress, enabling him to have his unpatriotic critics arrested and imprisoned, putting numerous opposition newspapers out of business. While a bit more subtle, Hartman says, this administration is likewise attempting to suppress any criticism, to eradicate any opposition. Progressive talk show host Janine Garofalo says, read this book for a jolt of illumination. We the People, A Call to Take Back America by Tom Hartman. Available in bookstores everywhere.
A researcher has suggestions for homeowners to keep birds flying instead of dying. I'm Richard Hooks for Earthwatch Radio. Birds routinely fly into glass windows simply because they don't see them. They might see reflections of the sky or something behind the glass that they want to investigate. What they don't see is a physical barrier that can hurt them and even kill them. Daniel Clem is a biologist with Muhlenberg College in Pennsylvania. He's spent decades studying the problems birds have with glass windows. Clem estimates that in the United States, at least 100 million birds die each year from hitting glass.
Short of habitat destruction, glass is the greatest source of death for wild birds, among them the rare, endangered, and threatened species of the world.
Clem has tried to find ways to reduce these fatal encounters. He says it helps to cover windows with nets or awnings during times of heavy bird activity. It also helps to adjust the position of bird feeders near windows. If they're close to the glass, a bird that accidentally flies from a feeder into a window pane won't be moving fast enough to get hurt. And Clem says birds will recognize the glass barrier if decals or other stickers are attached to the outside of windows.
If you take hawk silhouettes, or it doesn't matter, whatever shape, it could be diamonds, it could be circles, it could be anything, and you uniformly cover the surface of the glass, you have increased the opportunity of those animals to be able to recognize the glass as a barrier and stay away from it. If you're willing to do this, then the more that you can tolerate under your window, the better it will be for protecting the birds.
Clem says a long-term solution would be an entirely new kind of glass. He envisions something that's transparent from the inside, but appears to have patterns in it when viewed from the outside. Earthwatch Radio is a service of the Sea Grant Program and the Gaylord Nelson Institute at the University of Wisconsin.
This is the Democracy Zone with Tom Hartman.
I'm back. Yeah, welcome back. 5 minutes after, 5 minutes before the hour, Tom Hartman here with you. One of the folks in our chat room in Seattle apparently says went down to the Kerry headquarters yesterday to get a yard sale sign and bumper sticker. The place was packed. So there's some momentum growing. 1-866-889-8894. Our telephone number. Who is this? Rama in Santa Fe on the line. Hey, Rama. Well, it's, the other Rama. You're not the Rama who's going to be filling in for me in 5 minutes. What's up?
No. Greetings, Tom.
Hey, Rama. What's up?
I was just going to say, have you seen the documentary Afghan Massacre, Convoy of Death?
No, I have not.
Oh, they have shown that on Free Speech TV, Amy Goodman, WorldLink TV. If you get a chance, take a look at it.
I'll do that. I'll do that, Rama. Thanks for the tip. Afghan Massacre. I'll keep an eye out for it. Nathan in Arkansas is on the line. Hey, Nathan, what's up?
How's it going, Tom?
Great. What's up?
I heard yesterday that Sinclair was going to give Kerry an hour of airtime to, I guess, either rebut or put on whatever he wanted after the Bush programming.
What I heard was not that they were going to give him an hour of airtime. They were going to give him an opportunity to rebut or to have his say. That's a whole different thing. In fact, the Democrats have asked for. If Sinclair is going to run a full hour, they've said we'd like to have a full hour in the same time period the following day. You know, so it's the same audience, the same size audience, the same time period, and all that kind of thing. Sinclair said no.
Well, Michael Moore said last night on the Tonight Show that we would allow them to air Fahrenheit 9/11.
Sure. For free.
If they cut it down, I think that would really kind of defeat what they were trying to do.
Yeah, well, see, I think, you know, I wouldn't have a problem with Sinclair doing this, although they're gonna make this look like a news thing, you know, which is gonna cause it to have actually even more impact. I wouldn't have so much of a problem with Sinclair doing this if they also ran the movie Going Up River, which is the documentary about John Kerry's years in Vietnam, or his time in Vietnam, his months in Vietnam, and the years afterwards with Vietnam Veterans Against the War, his anti-Vietnam War efforts back in the United States. It covers the exact same period of time, the exact same events, and tells it from a different point of view. That would be fair and reasonable, but they're not going to do that. They're not going to do that. Ron, thanks for the...
Why won't they?
They won't because they've got a political agenda. They're trying to spin the election. They're trying to make sure that George W. wins. I mean, this is the October surprise, my friends. This is political sabotage being perpetrated on a candidate for president of the United States by a corporation that figures that if he loses and their guy wins, they'll be able to make millions of extra dollars. That's the bottom line here. And that's why this is criminal behavior on the part of Sinclair, in my humble opinion, not to mention the assault on democracy.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
If it weren't for In These Times, I'd be a man without a country, says author Kurt Vonnegut. For more than 27 years, the progressive news magazine In These Times has provided groundbreaking coverage of movements for social, environmental, and economic justice. It is the publication the scholar and activist Cornel West calls the most creative and challenging news magazine of the American left. In These Times features award-winning reporting and analysis of national and international news. Turn to In These Times for stories on civil liberties, the environment, labor, feminism, and much more. Writer Barbara Ehrenreich put it this way, "To people who say they are sick of the corporate-dominated and celebrity-fixated media, I say, stop whining and subscribe to In These Times." Find In These Times on your newsstand or visit us online at www.inthesetimes.com or call 1-800-827-0270. That's 1-800-827-0270.
Pop and not-so-pop culture, democracy, and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
And I'm Doug Cunningham.
The Wisconsin AFL-CIO presented a report to journalists Tuesday detailing manufacturing job losses in the state. The study comes on the heels of similar reports in Washington, Ohio, and Pennsylvania. The report finds that between January 2001 and May 2004, 61% of the layoffs by Wisconsin manufacturers were trade-related. Since 2001, 1 in 9 of Wisconsin's manufacturing jobs have disappeared. Milwaukee, the Fox River Valley, and Janesville are areas of the state hit hardest by the current trade policies. Bob Bowe, executive director of the AFL-CIO Industrial Union Council, said that the report is the first ever to rely on publicly reported official data to measure trade-related job losses. He says that the study is powerful evidence that current trade policies are hurting America's working families. Detailed information on job losses in America and which companies are shifting jobs overseas can be found at www.workingamerica.org.
As many as 60,000 students in the Chicago area found a substitute teaching their classes this week as 500 full-time teachers at the 7 Chicago City colleges went on strike. The Cook County College Teachers Union called the strike in response to administrators' efforts to increase their workload by one class per semester and 40 additional students with no overtime pay. The Cook County College Board is also seeking to increase health care costs by 400% and replace full-time teachers hiring more part-time faculty. Union members say they'll continue to walk picket lines until they receive a fair four-year contract. Outsourcing is a bigger problem in America than first thought. Officially, the Bureau of Labor Statistics says just over 4,600 private sector jobs in companies with 50 or more workers were lost to outsourcing in the first quarter of this year. But two labor experts say the total is really much higher. Stephanie Luce with the University of Massachusetts Amherst and Kate Bronfenbrenner at Cornell say the total is closer to 400,000 jobs by the end of this year. The two prepared a report for a bipartisan congressional group investigating outsourcing. Not only are many more jobs actually being exported, but more white-collar, information tech, and call center jobs are now leaving the country compared to 2001, when most outsourced jobs were blue-collar.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. After 30 years of improvement, leading indicators show a worsening environmental trend over the last 4 years. Statistics show that civil citations issued to polluters fell 57%. Criminal pollution prosecutions dropped 17%. Cleanups of toxic waste down by 52%. Fish consumption warnings for rivers doubled. Beach closing up 26%. Asthma attacks increased by 6%. On the bright side, greenhouse gas emissions were reduced by 0.5%.
You've been listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
We were given these ideas that there's weapons of mass destruction, but where are the weapons of mass destruction? They said they were so sure where they were, but where are they? When we were over there, we looked around. I was on an intelligence gathering team. We looked in scientific installations. We never found anything. And it was just a lie. And that wasn't a proper use of American troops. That wasn't a proper use of my life or my friends' lives or the Marines who I've seen die around me. It's not a proper use.
Move On Pack is responsible for the content of this advertisement.
After a recent congressional vote on the Freedom to Read Protection Act, one angry member said, "You win some, and some get stolen." He was a Republican, defying George W., John Ashcroft, and his own party's top leadership in Congress, all of whom lobbied furiously to defeat this act, which sought to ensure one of our most basic American liberties, the right to keep government snoops and bullies from secretly spying on the reading habits of perfectly innocent citizens. What could be more mom and apple pie than that? Bush, Ashcroft, and gang, however, had undermined this fundamental freedom with a nasty provision they tucked into their infamous liberty-busting USA Patriot Act in 2001. It allows federal agents to get a secret order from a secret court to walk into any public library or bookstore and demand the records of any and all patrons without showing anyone, even the court, any evidence that the people being investigated are involved in any criminal activity whatsoever. It's jackbooted autocratic power like this that led to the American Revolution. And just as in 1776, today's librarians, bookstore owners, writers, and freedom-loving people of all political stripes have risen up against the Bushites' authoritarian, un-American intrusion into our privacy. This grassroots uprising led to the Freedom to Read Act, which would have halted the intrusion. The good news is that the act passed. The sad news is that the GOP hierarchy then cheated. They held the vote open beyond the time allowed by the rules, taking an extra 23 minutes while the leaders broke the arms of 9 Republicans, forcing them to switch votes, thus defeating the act. In other words, the Bushites stole it, and they also stole an important piece of our liberties. This is Jim Hightower saying, but we've only begun to fight this insult to our democracy. To join the uprising, call the American Library Association, 800-545-2433.
I have these nightmares. This taco, not just an ordinary taco, but this big evil taco is haunting me.
Guacamole.
You see, I was exposed to credit cards in college, and I wasn't the most responsible person back then.
Go, go, go!
I mean, I heard the words credit card and thought, hey, hey, free money! Plane ticket to spring break? Credit card. New skis? Credit card. 135 taco dinners? Bam! Credit card. But hey, it's not too late to do something about your credit. Get ScorePower from Equifax.com. ScorePower gives you your credit report, credit score, and it puts you on the road toward the credit you deserve for just $14.95. So, check out Equifax.com today and get that taco you ate 7 years ago out of your life.
Get ScorePower at Equifax.com or 1-877-4-EQUIFAX. That's EQUIFAX. Equifax.
Adios, taco.
Get the power. Score power at Equifax.com.
the man who uncovers corporate lies, exposes political corruption, and has a clear vision of what America could become. Here's Tom Hartman.
And greetings, patriots, lovers of peace, freedom, and democracy, and the whole nine yards. Rama Schneider now sitting in for Tom Hartman, who's, I guess, heading off to his brand new career as some sort of highfalutin movie star, which, oh, well, you know how it goes. First he was our Tom, and then he gets nationalized, and then goes off into the movies and stuff, and then he's no longer our Tom. He belongs to the world. We have to share him, and we'll do that gratefully and happily and with great joy and pleasure. And we have a guest on the line here. I want to get to this gentleman really quick. We've got a limited amount of time. It's a very big subject we'll be talking about. But before I do, just a quick shout out to all you Boston Red Sox fans. If you're not a baseball fan, give me just 10 seconds here. The Red Sox look like they could pull the upset of the, I don't know, the millennia. You know, I mean, the Red Sox that were down against the Yankees 3-0 are now going into the 7th game of their playoffs to head off into the World Series and hopefully not bungle the ball. So shout out to the Red Sox. That's all I got to say with that. On to our guest. On the phone with me is Mr. Rob Ritchie, Executive Director of the Center for Voting and Democracy, a nonprofit organization that researches and advocates election reforms that promote voter turnout, accountable governance, and fair representation. And with that in mind, I guess we'll just welcome Mr. Ritchie. Robert, how you doing?
I'm doing just fine. Thanks for having me on today.
That's great. And thank you very much for joining us. Is there anything that you want to put in as a method of introduction? Because keep in mind, what people hear is what they're going to remember of you.
Yes. Well, one, they can keep in touch with us through our website, fairvote.org, and that's one name they should keep in mind, Fair Vote. And I think that what we're talking about today has a lot of powerful theory behind it, but we want to make sure people realize that there are lots of opportunities to work for these changes, both at a local level and starting to impact things at a national level. So that we have a lot more optimism about our opportunities to change systems based on some real experience.
Okay. Let's back up.
Some people might think.
Easy. But let's back up just a little bit here, because first, what is it that we're going to be talking? I haven't even introed the subject yet.
Oh, yes.
All they know is you're here.
Or lack thereof. And also, I mean, looking at this year's elections, we're just 13 days away now, and there were a lot of things that were exposed that about problems with our system in 2000 that are still there, and it's, I think it's a way to think about it is, you know, fool me once, shame on you, fool me twice,
can't
shame
get
on
fooled
us,
again.
In a sense, there's a lot of things that we need to take better charge of.
Right. And anybody out there, you want to take part, you got questions or comments for Mr. Ritchie or myself or just in general for the audience, 1-866-889-8894. Let me start off with what are some of the problems from 2000-2002, Rob, that we might be bringing into 2004?
Well, we can start at a kind of the most basic level, which is that we don't have a right to vote clearly stated in our Constitution. It's a surprise to people, but if you think it through, back in 1787, the framers were foresighted about a lot of things, but they didn't actually see voting typically as a right. They saw it more as a privilege that they denied to most adults at that time, including most white male adults, as well as, you know, all women and most people of color. And we never established that right in the years since. We have done things to expand democracy within the Constitution, but we have kept the right to vote as really a state right. It's something that our states and then often our counties really make the key decisions about rather than the federal government. And we saw what that led to in 2000. We made somewhat halting progress in the years since then with the Help America Vote Act in 2002. But because it operated within this decentralized means of protecting the right to vote, it's in some ways created a whole new set of problems without correcting a lot of the problems that were already there. So that's one that bothers us, and we support a right to vote in the Constitution.
Yeah, and
the fact that we could have someone get the most votes in the presidential race who loses again, that's due to this use of the quirky Electoral College, which not only can create that problem, but also means that most of us live in states where we're not getting any attention whatsoever this year.
All right, let's go. I want to just make, I guess, one filling out statement on that right to vote. If you look in the U.S. Constitution, you cannot be refused the right to vote based on certain specific criteria, but they could always find other criteria to deny somebody. I mean, for instance, you can't be denied the right to vote for being 18 or older because of the color of your skin, because of your gender, et cetera. But if you're a felon, however, they can just deny you the right to vote, et cetera. So there are reasons outside the Constitution that it's perfectly legitimate to say that you can't vote. Let me get to this Electoral College, because this is one I sometimes I feel ambivalent, but for the most part, I like the Electoral College, Rob. And let me explain why, and maybe you can address it from that angle. I view it kind of like how we have the Senate and the House of Representatives down in the federal government. The House of Representatives gives that popular voice in our government, supposedly. I realize I'm talking.
Let's talk about that in a bit, too.
Right. Okay. Right. But that's how it was meant to be. That was meant to, the House of Representatives was meant to represent the largest group of legal voters, whereas the Senate was meant to provide more of a geographical representation. That's why we have two from each state. And I realize I'm simplifying things an awful lot, but I got to get it to a point where I can understand it.
Mm-hmm.
But I see the Electoral College a lot like that, where without the Electoral College, we could have a presidential candidate that could, for instance, take New York and California and Texas and a few other high population states and basically get elected, go down to Washington, D.C., and not represent all the low population states. Am I wrong on that? Am I seeing devils that aren't there, or is there a way around this going with a popular vote?
Sure. Well, let's start off with just that basic framing. I think one is the U.S. House of Representatives is a completely unaccountable institution right now. I mean, virtually completely. I guess you never should say it so totally, but it's changed partisan control just once in 50 years.
Right.
The number of incumbents who lose is less than 2%, and in 2002, of the eight incumbents who lost, seven lost directly related to redistricting, and only one was kind of tossed out by the voters.
But it's
at this point not at all serving that function.
But it's not due to the Electoral College
of being democratically accountable. On the issue of the Electoral College, is you can add up all the votes that someone could win. Let's say a candidate, you know, wackily in a totally unexpected, basically impossible way, won every single popular vote cast in New York, California, Texas, Illinois, Florida, and Pennsylvania.
Okay.
They're still not even close to fit to a 50% of the popular vote. You know, people have to run and get a lot of votes everywhere to get 50% plus one. We support direct election with a majority requirement so that someone would have to get half the votes. And to get half the votes in the kind of politics that we live in, there's just no way that one can win as a regional candidate. And right now, the voters are actually largely ignored. There was a study done of ads in the presidential race, and it's not that we necessarily love to see presidential ads, but it's a reflection of how the candidates focus on people. Most of us live in a local jurisdiction that has not seen a single presidential ad.
Yeah.
Well, meanwhile, Toledo, Ohio, they've had more than 14,000 presidential ads.
And I feel for those people.
So there's a great inequality of how we're treated. The Bush campaign, they publicly admitted that they had not done any polling outside of 18 states in more than 2 years, so that they haven't even sought information from people to think about what they might be, you know, looking for to influence their messaging in 2 years in, you know, most of the country. So that right now we're already seeing, you know, complete, you know, kind of most states being completely written off. And if you have direct election, which we have for, you know, everything else in this country, there's a lot of experience about what happens. And what happens is people go out there and try to get votes. And if I'm running for governor of any state, I'm a pretty foolhardy person if I don't try to get votes wherever I might get them. And so that's what people do, is they typically try to get votes in a whole state, or if we had a direct election, we get them across the country.
If we're dealing with whoever gets the majority win, it would put this country as being more Democratic as opposed to being Republic. But we have a constitution that ostensibly is meant to protect the minorities as much as it's meant to allow the majorities to set how things run. And I realize, once again, is we can pick at whether or not that's in existence nowadays. But is it really to our advantage to set up a majority rule system that's going to be able to override? I mean, right now, at least, if you even just take a look at the same-sex partnership issue that's been going on, at least we've had a court system that has looked at the various state and federal constitutions and has said that, you know, look, these things, it's illegal to deny these people equal protection under the laws, whereas I know darn well that if we went to a majority rule all of a sudden, there would be a lot of same-sex couples that would be denied equal access to the laws of the United States and the states they live in. Is this something we really want to move towards?
Well, I think direct election of the president has really nothing to do with that. It's about our federalism, about having the Bill of Rights, about having separation of powers within the federal government. I'm just talking about the president of the United States being fairly elected,
okay,
and one person, one vote across the country. And that, if that single office is fairly elected, and I think that sort of part of that argument that you're making, in a sense, is that it's okay if someone wins with 40% of the vote if they happen to get the right sort of percentage of votes in the right set of states, and 60% of people vote against them. I mean, in a sense, I think we should just, you know, we should have a fairly elected office for president that doesn't actually do anything about, you know, having separation of powers. It doesn't do anything about federal courts. And it just means that that one office is one that we're all more a part of electing. And that, I think, actually, in some ways, protects our rights more, because more of us have a direct stake in it and are kind of brought in. I think that when a lot of us are written off, it can be alienating from our system and not bring them into our system, and that actually can lead to more damage than simply having a fair system.
Okay. But I want to move on to something else here that's a big topic. 1-866-889-8894. Rob, let me start, because one of the hardest things people have to do is describing, well, it used to be called instant runoff voting, but now I guess they're going more towards, I think they're taking the instant out of it.
In San Francisco, they're calling it ranked choice voting.
Thank
as
you.
They put it in place,
yeah,
there. But it's still, I think, the instant runoff name helps get it what it does.
Okay, so IRV. Give us a description of IRV, and I mean this one to be a short, pithy one to start with.
Sure. It's a system where when you're electing a single person, you generate a majority winner, someone with more than 50%, in one single round, one single trip to the polls. And that's the end result. And the way you get there is that as a voter, you express a first choice, but then you also express your sort of contingent choices, your second and third choices.
Hold that thought, because if you'll stick through the commercial, folks, we'll be right back with Rob Ritchie. Rama Schneider in for Tom Hartman.
I guess I better let the dog in.
Like the small dog that rules the house, Small Dog Electronics is the small computer company that really rules when it comes to customer service. Small Dog Electronics is your authorized Apple reseller in Wakefield, Vermont. Sure, you can buy your computer out of a catalog, but how do you know you're really getting what you want or what you need? At Small Dog, they don't work on commission. Their only motivation is making sure you're a happy customer. Put your business on the leading edge with the world's fastest computer, the new Macintosh G5. You'll finish the job ahead of the pack, and automatic security updates lock out viruses. That's speed and dependability that will keep you focused on your customers instead of sitting on hold with tech support.
I guess you want to get on the couch, huh?
Like the small dog who everybody makes room for, Small Dog Electronics is big on customer service. Small Dog Electronics. Check them out on the web at smalldog.com or at their showroom on Route 100 in Waitsfield.
No way. You're not getting on the bed.
Bonjour, my name is Véronique Raskin. I founded the Organic Wine Company 25 years ago. If you love wine and have not tried our French wines, you are in for a treat. Nowadays, people everywhere are buying organic fruits and vegetables because they know they taste better. Organic grapes are so luscious, When turned into wine, you can really taste the difference with every sip. So our wines are delicious and eco-friendly. So I want to make it easy for you to try them out. Call me right away at 1-888-ECO-WINE and I will send you three of my favorite organically grown French wines at half off the regular price. That's just $25 plus shipping. Isn't that magnifique? I think so. If you don't share my enthusiasm, I'll gladly refund your money. So take me up on my offer and call me at 1-888-ECO-WINE. ECOWINE. Au revoir.
Can you imagine a world in which all kids live healthy, safe, productive, and prosperous lives? Well, that world is within our grasp, and there's a way to reach it. It's called Ecolonomics. And to learn more, just pull up DennisWeaverNow.com and learn how to get a free report of our Ecolonomics educational program and how together we can build a world of prosperity without pollution. DennisWeaverNow.com. DennisWeaverNow.com. DennisWeaverNow.com.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. The Bush administration can't seem to get it right when it comes to creating jobs. In the U.S., there's a net loss of jobs. In Iraq, the Bush administration blames a clerical error for overstating the number of Iraqi jobs in projects funded by the U.S. Agency for International Development. The agency first said more than 88,000 were working in its projects as of September 15th, but that has changed to just under 46,000 blamed on the clerical error.
Visit iowapeace.com for books on justice and peace. The Last Liberal Outlaw is Mike Palasek's new novel. Chuck Gregory with BlueEar.com had this to say. Palasek is at his best when writing about small-town America. It's a place he clearly loves, even as he pokes fun at its quirks and reveals the sickness that lies just below the surface. It's a place he knows, and he shares his knowledge in delightfully original ways, even as he cries out for change. We haven't had a writer like Palasek since Kurt Vonnegut was at his peak. Mike is an Iowa author, former federal prisoner for peace, small-town newspaper reporter, seminarian, and nominee for the U.S. House of Representatives in the Iowa Democratic Party 2000 election. For more information and more about Mike's other novels, visit iowapeace.com. The revolution won't be televised, but you can read about it. The Last Liberal Outlaw, A New American Revolution, is happening in the heartland.
Fearlessly exploring the truth of the day, here's Tom Hartman.
All right, welcome back. Tom Hartman radio program. Rama Schneider sitting in for Tom. Tom's off to be a big highfalutin movie star. We have a really great guest here, Mr. Rob Ritchie, Executive Director of the Center for Voting and Democracy, a nonprofit organization researches and advocates for election reforms that promote voter turnout, accountable governance, and fair representation. And I guess fairvote.org is your folks' website, Mr. Ritchie.
That's right, it is.
Okay, thank you very much for joining us. We got some callers on, but I want to just put them on hold. I want to let them sit there for another minute because I'm talking about this instant runoff voting, IRV. Why, if you could just take maybe a minute or two so we can get to the callers here, but why is... What's the need for IRV and what's it going to do for us?
Well, here's where we think it matters. As we were saying, it's a system where you rank candidates and your ballot counts for your first choice, and everyone's ballot counts for their first choice. If you get a majority winner, you've got a winner. But if no one gets a majority, then you actually can look at those second choices for the people who voted for weak candidates and simulate a runoff election, which most countries use for president. Count those ballots for their next choice among the top candidates, and you end up getting a majority winner in a single round of voting. What that does is completely reverses the whole dynamic about spoiler, quote-unquote spoiler candidates. Chairman of our group is John Anderson, and when he ran for president in 1980, he had a lot to say that was different than what Jimmy Carter and Ronald Reagan had to say when Ross Perot ran, and when Ralph Nader has run, and other candidates, libertarians and Greens and so on, run. They often present issues that are important to hear,
right.
But we have a system that breaks down as soon as more than two people run, and it's just a statutory change to go to instant runoff voting. You get a majority winner. You can allow these new ideas, new chances to bring more voters in, and it's a great step toward fair elections. The other part of the puzzle that we would like to see is kind of referencing back to the congressional elections is, and how static and stale those are, is to open up winner-take-all itself to proportional representation. And I think if we could get some of these changes, we'd have just a more vibrant, you know, democracy that looks like it's colorful rather than sort of the black and white stale democracy we often get today.
Okay, now out in San Francisco, they're doing IRV, but I forget, you gave the proper name that they're calling it for out there. Is this the first major municipality to be engaging in an IRV ballot?
It is in a long time. Actually, the ranked choice system that was a kind of proportional representation variant of it was used in some big cities back in the first half of the 20th century, New York City, Cleveland, Cincinnati, and it really worked quite well as to kind of opening up representation to more voices and different people and promoting coalition building. That's one thing that's happening in San Francisco that people are really liking, is that candidates are working together because they want to not only be voters' first choices, they want to be second choices. And you and I might be going after the same voters, but we also know that it would behoove us to not, be so negative that voters who vote you first won't list me second.
Okay.
So we're actually seeing much more kind of a collaborative coalition-building behavior, which I think is all to the good as well.
Okay, nice point, Rob. Let's take a call here while we got some time. 1-866-889-8894, and this is Jonathan from Palm Desert, California. Hey, Jonathan, what's going on?
Hey there. Just a couple of quick questions. One, I heard that Colorado was planning on going from a winner-take-all to to splitting up their electoral college votes. So instead of the entire state of Colorado voting to see who would be the president, they would split up the Electoral College between sort of a proportion of who won. Would that be an improvement towards Electoral College voting?
I think if we did it in the whole country, and you're right that that's on the ballot this November, and one of the interesting twists is that if it passes, actually Colorado will use it immediately, and so this year's presidential vote in Colorado won't be winner-take-all for the Electoral College, but it'll be proportional, and so the winner of the state, the person who gets most votes, will get 5 votes probably rather than 9. And I think if that was done in all states simultaneously, which has been proposed quite seriously over the years and actually passed one House of Congress, I think 3 times, it would do good things that are comparable to direct election. I don't think as simple and as straightforward as direct election.
I think
if done nationally,
Rob,
it would be a good idea.
I got to cut you in. Thanks for the call, John. We'll be right back.
A must read, The Edison Gene, ADHD and the Gift of the Hunter Child by Tom Hartman, best-selling author of Attention Deficit Disorder, A Different Perception. Ed Halliwell, a nationally recognized expert on ADD, said this about The Edison Gene.
Tom Hartman demonstrates that ADHD can be associated with creativity, high achievement, and a most successful adaptive style.
The Edison Gene, now available in bookstores everywhere.
Pop and not-so-pop culture, democracy, and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
And I'm Doug Cunningham.
The Wisconsin AFL-CIO presented a report to journalists Tuesday detailing manufacturing job losses in the state. The study comes on the heels of similar reports in Washington, Ohio, and Pennsylvania. The report finds that between January 2001 and May 2004, 61% of the layoffs by Wisconsin manufacturers were trade-related. Since 2001, 1 in 9 of Wisconsin's manufacturing jobs have disappeared. Milwaukee, the Fox River Valley, and Janesville are areas of the state hit hardest by the current trade policies. Bob Bowe, executive director of the AFL-CIO Industrial Union Council, said that the report is the first ever to rely on publicly reported official data to measure trade-related job losses. He says that the study is powerful evidence that current trade policies are hurting America's working families. Detailed information on job losses in America and which companies are shipping jobs overseas can be found at www.workingamerica.org.
As many as 60,000 students in the Chicago area found a substitute teaching their classes this week as 500 full-time teachers at the seven Chicago City colleges went on strike. The Cook County College Teachers Union called the strike in response to administrators' efforts to increase their workload by one class per semester and 40 additional students with no overtime pay. The Cook County College Board is also seeking to increase health care costs by 400% and replace full-time teachers hiring more part-time faculty. Union members say they'll continue to walk picket lines until they receive a fair four-year contract. Outsourcing is a bigger problem in America than first thought. Officially, the Bureau of Labor Statistics says just over 4,600 private sector jobs in companies with 50 or more workers were lost to outsourcing in the first quarter of this year. But two labor experts say the total is really much higher. Stephanie Luce with the University of Massachusetts Amherst and Kate Bronfenbrenner at Cornell say the total is closer to 400,000 jobs by the end of this year. The two prepared a report for a bipartisan congressional group investigating outsourcing. Not only are many more jobs actually being exported, but more white-collar, information tech, and call center jobs are now leaving the country compared to 2001, when most outsourced jobs were blue-collar.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. After 30 years of improvement, leading indicators show a worsening environmental trend over the last 4 years. Statistics show that civil citations issued to polluters fell 57%. Criminal pollution prosecutions dropped 17%. Cleanups of toxic waste down by 52%. Fish consumption warnings for rivers doubled. Beach closing up 26%. Asthma attacks increased by 6%. On the bright side, greenhouse gas emissions were reduced by 0.5%.
You've been listening to WIN, Workers' Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Bringing democracy to the United States of America, here's Tom Hartman.
All right, welcome back to the Tom Hartman Radio Program. Rama Schneider sitting in for Tom. He's off to carry on with his brand new movie career, doing something about global warming, you know. A bunch of liberals sitting around a kitchen table making up things and decided, hey, I know, let's have global warming. And then what we'll do is we'll make a film about it, and then people will believe us, even though it's totally bunk, because, of course, there's no global warming or climate change. How can all these people, how can people be changing the climate of the United States of America and the rest of the world? Well, screw the rest of the world. We're just worried about the United States of America. I don't know. Okay, hey, folks, as we go on now, 1-866-889-8894 if you want to join in any of the conversation. But first, on the line with us from I don't know where, we have Victoria Jones from Talk Radio News Service. And hello, Ms. Jones. How are you doing?
I'm very well, thank you. We're right here in Washington, D.C.
Oh, you poor lady. Don't you ever get to get out of there, or does just Ellen get out of there?
Nope. Get to stay here all the time.
Yeah. You see, that's what you get for being one of the slaves and not the boss.
Well, you know, there are certainly advantages to being slaves. Of course, you know, basically we're a commune here, so there are no slaves and no bosses.
Really?
God. No.
Obviously, you don't work for me, then. Why?
No, I don't, as a matter of fact.
It's a good thing, because you'd quit. I don't have any employees because of the way I am. Okay. I'm totally off different subjects here. Victoria, what's going on that we need to know about from Washington, D.C., please?
Well, a couple of things. One is that there's a House Senate Conference Committee getting together today and possibly later in the week as they go over the House and Senate bills based on the 9/11 Committee's recommendations and its report, and also the hearings held throughout August.
Right.
And they're trying to cross some legislation in between the two bills, which do not agree with each other in many respects, so they can have something written and signed into law by the president by the election. That's sort of the main work that's going on in Washington.
We don't care what gets signed into law, just as long as something's done in front of the cameras, right?
Oh, absolutely. They all want to be able to say, look what we did, before they go home and get reelected, of course, which is what they hope. So I don't know how much time they'll spend, because they haven't got that much time for campaigning. So, but yes, that is the plan.
Yeah. So is anything going to – are they actually going to get it done? I mean, it seems to me like it with Republicans in control of both the House and the Senate, they'd see it as such an imperative they would get something out. But is there some sort of common sense holding things up there so that it may not actually get done before the elections?
Yes, there is. And basically it's the Senate who are acting in a sense like the grown-ups and the House running away like the teenagers who've taken the 9/11 Commission's recommendations and run with them and taken them much further than the Senate wants to go.
Right.
So, and there are some parts, particularly having to do with expanding the Patriot Act and other issues that the Senate does not want to sign on to. So it is possible that it won't happen. And there are senators saying there is no magic date here. There is no reason to get the legislation written if it's not good legislation, because it's not going to be rewritten once it's done.
Yeah.
Just wait.
Yeah, definitely. So what's this, from politicians that you've talked to, what's their sense? Do they just kind of want to say, look, this is too hard, too cumbersome, I need to go home and get reelected, or are the incumbents so comfortable in their fat little seats that they're not worried about getting home to get reelected?
Well, there are some who are just exactly that comfortable, and maybe what they'll do is the other members of the conference committees will say, look, you all stay, and we'll go back and work on our elections. But there's another divide too between those who really are very politically motivated and really do just want to get something written, and other members of Congress, particularly senators, who are taking this very, very seriously and have worked extremely hard during August. I mean, you know, 12, 18-hour days. To do the reading, to do the hearings, to talk to the witnesses, and to really work out, okay, what can we do to improve security, to get the imagination, which the 9/11 Commission said was the main thing that was lacking, and to prepare for and to make sure this doesn't happen again. And so some of them are really very serious about this, and frankly, they won't care about going home so much and getting elected, but I think they will look at it, and if it's clear it's not going to get done, they would rather not do it.
You know,
just do it.
You mentioned the word imagination. If I could just take up 30 seconds of your time, Victoria. The other day, I think it was about a week ago, I was watching a movie called Black Sunday, and it was from the 70s. And what it talked about, it wasn't quite running a plane into something, but on a Super Bowl where the president was going to attend, terrorists, I think these were European terrorists, came over. They hijacked a blimp and had set explosives underneath it with...
I've seen that.
Have you seen that? And
yeah.
and they almost go in and almost wipe out the president at the Super Bowl. I think it was supposed to be at the Orange Bowl, if I remember correctly. When they talk about imagination, we've got movie people that have been imagining using aircraft for terrorist attacks, obviously, for decades. Do you think that just a smokescreen that when they threw out the word imagination was just a way for saying, look, we're such a bunch of incompetent boobs that we couldn't think to deal with these issues, or are they onto something?
From what I've known of the 9/11 Commission members and the Commission itself, and I attended nearly all of the hearings, I don't think it was, because they were frustrated. And
yeah.
They spoke to Tom Clancy, for example, who did imagine planes going into buildings as bombs.
Yeah.
Tom Clancy, who knows exactly what the intelligence budget is when, you know, nobody else is allowed to know because it's a secret. So they, you know, they spoke with people like this, and they felt that government, that those in government weren't using their imagination. And in fact, in one of the hearings, I can't remember who it was who said this, it was in the House, one of the House hearings in August. I think it might have been Senator Bob Kerry who made the point that, you know, that he felt he could say this, having himself, that it might be a good idea to take some time off in August and go to the beach and start reading some adventure novels rather than spending all their time sitting around in Washington, because that's the way that you find out what everybody else is thinking about.
Yeah. Okay, interesting.
It seems valid to me.
Yeah. Anything else of importance we should know about other than...
Only other thing is that Congress has announced, fairly quietly, but it's got out, that they're all going to get flu shots.
Because
they're important and they shake hands with people.
I know. I'm not important. People avoid me anyway in the streets.
There you are. Well, you're okay then. Or wear gloves and a mask like Michael Jackson.
Well, you know, I'm a well enough known local gadfly that people cross the street to avoid talking to me. So I'm happy with that, actually.
You're pretty safe then.
Yes, I am. I won't get the flu, but everybody else will. Well, Victoria, how's the weather down there, by the way, before I let you go?
I've just been for a walk. It's a little cool, but the leaves are turning, and it's gray, but it's a beautiful fall day.
Great. Well, get out there and enjoy it. Get some fresh air. It's good for the human body. And thank you very much for the great phone call. I appreciate it. And you have an excellent
day.
Thanks
very much.
You betcha. Bye-bye. All right, that was Victoria Jones from the from the Radio News Network, if that would be. So, okay, hey, let's keep up with this elections talk if you folks want to. 1-866-889-8894, because coming up at the top of the hour, we have another guest coming up at the top for the first part of the next hour. We'll be talking about, it's from Human Rights, U.S. Human Rights Organization announces international monitoring of the U.S. electoral process this fall. We're going to find out what that's all about. And maybe it's even necessary. I don't know. I do want to mention real quick, too, there's all sorts of ways to participate in the show. Of course, you can call in on the phone. If you're on the Internet right now, let's say you're at work and the boss has gone down the hallway doing something else, go to TomHartman.com, click on the chat button, and you get to go in the chat room where these whole bunch of, I swear, these are like the most intelligent people in the world in the chat room. They have such a case of erudites in there. I mean, these people are filthy with erudites. So yeah, if you're on the net, go to TomHartman.com and click on chat room and join the people in the chat room. They're a lot of fun to type back and forth with. Let's see. How about Spruill & Associates? God, everybody's been talking about Spruill & Associates. Of course, they're the firm hired by the Republican National Committee to register voters that were... We don't need to register Democrats. You know, Democrat registration? Yeah, get rid of that one. Ah, here's a good Republican. Democrat? You know, they just go through trashing. Man, how do you deal with people like this? I mean, it's like Tom was talking about, I forget what he's talking about earlier in the first hour, where, Sinclair. You know, Sinclair's violating the election laws, and they know it with what they're doing, but they're not going to get, nobody's going to prosecute them before the elections. I mean, even if it weren't a political thing, they wouldn't have time to prosecute Sinclair before the elections. Nobody's going to prosecute anybody from Spruill & Associates before the elections because, for the simple reason that even if it weren't a partisan thing, there'd be no time to prosecute Spruill & Associates for whatever wrongdoing that they could be convicted of. So that's all kind of phony, phony, phony. Watch out what you sign, folks. Students at the Montgomery County Community College were signing a petition, apparently, last month being circulated on their Bluebell campus to legalize marijuana for primarily medicinal purposes. Here's a good switch. Apparently, what happened when they signed this petition to legalize marijuana for medicinal purposes, they actually were registering as Republicans. Can you get that? Jennifer Fugo, 24-year-old student. This is very disheartening. Yes, it is. I'll bet it is. She describes herself as a victim of voter registration manipulation. How much of that is going on? Just this outright sign them up. Let's see. What puzzles me, and I guess in states where you have to vote in the primary of the party that you're registered with, it would make a difference. So I don't know what the laws are in where Montgomery Community College is. I'm not even sure what state it's in, tell you the truth. The Times Herald, I'm trying to even find a state. I can't even find a state. But, for instance, in Vermont, it's got open primary laws. And you don't register as any party when you go to register to vote. You just go register to vote. And that's how that is. So you can go and vote in any primary that you choose to. However, I know other states that you can only vote in the primary of the party that you're registered in. So I guess these things do make a difference when it comes time to voting in a primary. But in a general election, party registration means squat. You know, it has no meaning whatsoever. But As Ms. Jennifer Fugo, the 24-year-old student, notes, everyone is encouraging young people to register and vote. And then they experience something like this. This is just outrageous. Oh, yes. In August, she had her, she had been living in New York and returned to the community college in area in August, had her voter registration transferred to Plymouth. Is this New Hampshire? That could be New Hampshire. I don't know. Anyway, her new registration card at that time correctly listed her party affiliation as Democrat. And then imagine her surprise when she received a new registration card from the county that listed her as a registered Republican. Oh, my gosh, a golly. All sorts of fun and dandy things going on. It's not all bad news, though. Okay? At least I don't think it's all bad news. Look, there's going to be chicanery in elections. Okay, this is something important that we all got to remember. There are people that will do bodily harm to you for $50 or $100 or to get your car. We all know this. We all accept it beyond a shadow of a doubt. The world is full of petty little violent criminals who deserve to spend their time behind bars. It should come as no surprise when you're talking about the type of power that is wielded at the federal government level of the United States of America, or even at the state levels of most states in this country, and the trillions of dollars involved, and how you can affect where those trillions of dollars to go. It should be as no surprise to anybody that crooked people are going to be trying to game the system for their own personal benefit, okay? I tell people, look, of course they've got crooks up at the federal government. I don't know if it's 10% or 50% or 90%, but I guarantee you they're there. Oh, no, all of those people go down. No, they don't. We are talking about so much money and such a high level of power that's where, look, you think organized crime is going to worry about piddly little street crime when they can get into government? Jeez, get real. So, yeah, look, expect the criminal actions. That's why we're supposed to keep an eye on stuff. That's why we're not supposed to go off and take a nap and wake up morning of November 2nd and go out and vote however we make a wild guess and then go back to sleep, okay? That's why you, me, your neighbor and their neighbor and all those people driving up and down the street, that's why we're all supposed to be going out and keeping an eye on things. It's because if we don't keep an eye out to keep the crooks at bay, the crooks win the day. And I'm a poet. But anyway, as I say, the news isn't all bad. As a matter of fact, coming out just today on the New York Times, the electronic version anyway, I ran across an article, Interest Groups Mounting Costly Push to Get Out the Vote. And what it talks about is these various, what we call special interest groups that are spending lots of money, according to the New York Times article, at least $350 million into get out the vote campaigns. I think that's good. I think that's really, really good. Now, I know they're not all trying to get out the vote for people who are going to vote the way I want them to, but I just think it's great. There's $350 million to get people to the polls is a very, very good sign, even if it's by accident. Rama Schneider sitting in for Tom Hartman. Tom will be back tomorrow.
Are George Bush's policies getting you down? Have you had enough of Bush's messianic militarism? Does John Ashcroft's assault on the Bill of Rights scare you? Do you believe that Dick Cheney had his conscience surgically removed 3 decades ago? Are you angry at the Iraq fiasco that was the brainchild of Deputy Secretary of Defense Paul out of his Wolfowitz? Well, then subscribe to the Progressive magazine. You'll get the insights of Barbara Ehrenreich, the inspiration of Howard Zinn, and the mirth of Molly Ivins, Will Durst, and Kate Clinton. They'll help you survive.
survive this dark age. And check this out. You can subscribe today for only $12 for 12 monthly issues. Simply get on the web and go to www.progressive.org or call 1-800-827-0555 and mention offer radio. That's 1-800-827-0555 and mention the radio offer from the Tom Hartman Program. That's The Progressive. It's your antidote to reactionary policies.
Hi, I'm David Orrick. Do you have a dust mask? Well, if you use a bagless vacuum and you're sensitive to dust, a leading consumer magazine products testing magazine warns you should wear a dust mask. But here's a better idea. Try my newest hypoallergenic 8-pound Auric XL risk-free for 30 days. It uses triple-walled disposable filter bags. Try emptying a bagless vacuum and see what happens. Dust gets all over your hands and face and back into the room and on the kitchen counter. And you get to breathe it in? I believe a vacuum should capture the dust, not your lungs. That's why with my Auric XL, the filter bags are self-sealing. What goes in the bag stays in the bag, even when you empty it. So try my hypoallergenic 8-pound Auric XL free for 30 days. Call 1-800-989-4200. 1-800-989-4200. Then, if you still want a bagless vacuum, I'll send you a dust mask to wear.
If it weren't for In These Times, I'd be a man without a country, says author Kurt Vonnegut. For more than 27 years, the progressive news magazine In These Times has provided groundbreaking coverage of movements for social, environmental, and economic justice. It is the publication the scholar and activist Cornel West calls the most creative and challenging news magazine of the American left. In These Times features award-winning reporting and analysis of national and international news. Turn to In These Times for stories on civil liberties, the environment, labor, feminism, and much more. Writer Barbara Ehrenreich put it this way, to people who say they are sick of the corporate-dominated and celebrity-fixated media, I say, stop whining and subscribe to In These Times. Find In These Times on your newsstand or visit us online at www.inthesetimes.com or call 1-800-827-0270. That's 1-800-827-0270.
Canada gets tough on a foreign beetle that eats up trees and property values. I'm Richard Hoops for Earthwatch Radio. Last November, the Asian long-horned beetle was discovered in Ontario eating away at trees around Toronto. The sighting set off alarms across Canada and the United States because the insect could devastate hardwood forests. Trees typically die within a few years after beetle larvae tunnel under their bark and start chewing away. Howard Stanley is a project officer with the Canadian Food Inspection Agency, and it's his job to make sure the beetle doesn't spread. He says it's hard work. The beetles spread easily because they have an appetite for all kinds of trees, including maples, poplars, and birches. Stopping the beetle requires removing and destroying infested trees, and it requires removing other trees within 400 meters that might be a target for the insects. That creates another problem. Stanley says some people are reluctant to report infestations because they worry about losing all the trees on their property.
We do empathize with the impact on property owners. But we have to worry about the greater impact on the entire nation as far as the environment and especially as far as the economy. This insect, if allowed to go rampant, would have a huge impact upon the economy. We're looking at a hardwood forest products industry in Canada that generates $11 billion Canadian annually.
Canada now gives property owners up to $300 in compensation for every tree lost. Stanley hopes this will encourage people to report sightings of the destructive beetle.
The key to success is that detection. If we detect it early enough, this is one insect we can actually eradicate as long as we know where it is.
Earthwatch Radio is a service of the Sea Grant Program and the Gaylord Nelson Institute at the University of Wisconsin.
Listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
I think it's time for a change, 'cause I'm tired of these games. I'm gonna leave them inside, 'cause I'm all
right. It's time for a change,
and I'm tired of this rain.
Cow Mama. Rama Schneider sitting in for Tom Hartman. Tom Hartman radio program. We're at about 4 minutes before the top of the hour. That's right. I'm Rama Schneider. I am the radio show host that tells you to stop your stupid elitist liberal whining. My God. Why can't you all be good conservatives like me? Stand behind our men, even if we never hear the truth. I don't know. Why not? Hey, you know something seriously, though, folks? It's the little things that will matter. It's the little things that will add up to one very big, big good thing. So, you know, keep at it. Don't lose heart. On the phone with us here, Paul from Florida. How you doing, Paul?
I'm doing okay. I'd like to comment, if I may, about Sinclair Broadcasting.
You got it.
In my opinion, it is unconstitutional for a corporation to control the unequal access of an avenue for expressing freedom of speech.
Okay, why would you say that's wrong?
It's obvious why it's wrong. You know what it would lead to? It would lead to anarchism and totalitarianism with a corporate seal, because it would keep out dissent and reason and accountability.
Yep.
Money corrupts and power corrupts, and absolute power absolutely corrupts. History's proven it.
So are you buying Sinclair's argument that today, and somewhere in my stack of stuff, I have a press release they put out yesterday about it, but I don't want to try to dig it out at the moment. But are you buying their argument that, look, well, we're not going to show the whole movie. What we're going to do is instead we're going to put together this one-hour special on POWs and politics and suppression of free speech. You buy that at all?
No, I think their intentions are obvious. They're a political lobbying arm for the Republican Party.
Yep, that's what I think, too. All right. Anything else you want to add there, Paul?
Thank you.
All right, well, great. Thank you very much for the phone call, and have a great day down in Florida. It is certainly a lovely, lovely little world that we live in. You know, there's more stuff. We're going to be talking some more about elections here. We got, like I say, we have this gentleman who'll be giving a call at the top of the hour, and we'll be talking about more issues with elections and the possibility of bringing in outside international monitoring of our electoral process this fall. And what does that say about us in the United States of America? Rama Schneider sitting in for Tom Hartman. Tom Hartman's off helping out with a movie about global warming. He will be back tomorrow. In the meantime, we all sit tight, because we're all going to stay right here. We're all going to be here.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
Now, it's time for This Billionaire Moment.
When it came time to bilk California out of billions in energy costs, Kenneth Lay said, "Send me." When George Bush's campaign needed hundreds of thousands of bundled dollars, Kenneth Lay said, "Send me." When Dick Cheney needed help crafting energy policy that was friendlier to corporations, Kenneth Lay said, "Send me." And when someone had to keep small Enron investors calm so the big guys could bail out before the stock collapsed, Kenneth Lay said, "Send me." He pioneered new ways to create profits, and now he has to wear an orange jumpsuit and languish in a cell without room service. We can only hope that there's a squash court at that minimum security prison. I'm Xenophobe for This Billionaire Moment.
This Billionaire Moment is brought to you by BillionairesForBush.com.
Here come the billionaire!
Pop and not-so-pop culture, democracy, and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
And I'm Doug Cunningham.
The Wisconsin AFL-CIO presented a report to journalists Tuesday detailing manufacturing job losses in the state. The study comes on the heels of similar reports in Washington, Ohio, and Pennsylvania. The report finds that between January 2001 and May 2004, 61% of the layoffs by Wisconsin manufacturers were trade-related. Since 2001, one in nine of Wisconsin's manufacturing jobs have disappeared. Milwaukee, the Fox River Valley, and Janesville are areas of the state hit hardest by the current trade policies. Bob Bowe, executive director of the AFL-CIO Industrial Union Council, said that the report is the first ever to rely on publicly reported official data to measure trade-related job losses. He says that the study is powerful evidence that current trade policies are hurting America's working families. Detailed information on job losses in America and which companies are shifting jobs overseas can be found at www.workingamerica.org.
As many as 60,000 students in the Chicago area found a substitute teaching their classes this week as 500 full-time teachers at the seven Chicago City colleges went on strike. The Cook County College Teachers Union called the strike in response to administrators' efforts to increase their workload by one class per semester and 40 additional students with no overtime pay. The Cook County College Board is also seeking to increase health care costs by 400% and replace full-time teachers hiring more part-time faculty. Union members say they'll continue to walk picket lines until they receive a fair four-year contract. Outsourcing is a bigger problem in America than first thought. Officially, the Bureau of Labor Statistics says just over 4,600 private sector jobs in companies with 50 or more workers were lost to outsourcing in the first quarter of this year. But two labor experts say the total is really much higher. Stephanie Luce with the University of Massachusetts Amherst and Kate Bronfenbrenner at Cornell say the total is closer to 400,000 jobs by the end of this year. The two prepared a report for a bipartisan congressional group investigating outsourcing. Not only are many more jobs actually being exported, but more white-collar, information tech, and call center jobs are now leaving the country compared to 2001, when most outsourced jobs were blue-collar.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. After 30 years of improvement, leading indicators show a worsening environmental trend over the last 4 years. Statistics show that civil citations issued to polluters fell 57%. Criminal pollution prosecutions dropped 17%. Cleanups of toxic waste down by 52%. Fish consumption warnings for rivers doubled. Beach closing up 26%. Asthma attacks increased by 6%. On the bright side, greenhouse gas emissions were reduced by 0.5%.
You've been listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
We were given these ideas that there's weapons of mass destruction, but where are the weapons of mass destruction? They said they were so sure where they were, but where are they? When we were over there, we looked around. I was on an intelligence gathering team. We looked in scientific installations. We never found anything. And it was just a lie. And that wasn't a proper use of American troops. That wasn't a proper use of my life or my friends' lives or the Marines who I've seen die around me. It's not a proper use.
Move On Pack is responsible for the content of this advertisement.
Here's a new political slogan with some integrity and democratic gravitas to it. Let's run government like a government. This is, of course, the opposite of the tired, old, tried and failed slogan that politicians of both parties have been pushing for years. We'll run government like a business. The Clintonites used this in the 90s with their Reinventing Government campaign, declaring that government agencies should become efficient business operations and treat people as customers. Oh? Efficient like what? The mammoth insurance company bureaucracies, or maybe the military contractors who waste and defraud us of billions of our tax dollars? And do they mean customer treatment like we get from don't-give-a-damn banks and telephone companies? Today, we have a fully corporatized White House run by former CEOs, including Bush, Cheney, Rumsfeld, and company. They're literally running government through such standard corporate practices as operating in secret, twisting tax laws to benefit the elite, opposing public disclosure and right-to-know laws, shutting out dissenters and dissing dissent itself, rigging the regulatory rules for corporate gain, stomping on labor, running roughshod over the environment, disempowering consumers, and using advertising gimmicks to hide their deceits. It's time to get real. Government is not a business, and we are not customers. We're citizens. Far from being passive consumers of governmental policies, we're the sovereign powers who can make or unmake those policies. Corporations, by their very nature, are exclusive private empires that exist to serve the bottom line of the wealthiest investors, including the CEOs. Everyone and everything else be damned. That's no model for a democracy. This is Jim Hightower saying, America's founders knew that corporate power was anathema to the public interest and to the democratic will of the people. So they created a framework to run government like a government. It's time to put those democratic principles into action again.
It's a wild day here at the stock market. Let's talk to some traders. How you doing?
I'm taking a shelling, but I'm still gelling.
Okay, and how about you?
I'm gelling and selling. Gelling and selling.
My trades are smelling.
Mine too, but who cares?
We're gelling.
Are you gelling yet? Dr. Scholl's massaging gel insoles are made from the softest gel ever created. If you and your feet don't feel outrageously comfortable, you get your money back, guaranteed. Are you gelling? Dr. Scholl's.
Your dog eats your new sofa. Pet satisfaction rating 3%. Your hairdresser doesn't know burnt auburn from burnt toast. Hair color satisfaction rating 5%. After years of marriage, your husband still leaves the seat up. Spouse satisfaction rating minus 2%. Your car insurance company saves you hundreds of dollars and handles your claim quickly and fairly. Car insurance satisfaction rating 97%. Oh, you must have Geico.
Geico's customer satisfaction stands at 97%. How would you rate your car insurance company? Geico. 1-800-947-AUTO.
Calling for a rapid and radical return to the old values that made America great, the values of democracy on which this country was founded, here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome, all you lovers of democracy, fighters for peace and freedom, and all you folks that are going to get out there and vote on the November 2nd to kind of like pull a little bit of a regime change in the United States. We need one, you know. It's a good thing. In a way, we are still at the point in our nation's history, and I honestly believe this, we are still at the point where we don't have to pull anything more violent than the trigger of a voting machine. But you know what? I think we're at a tipping point where we can start sliding away to where the trigger of the voting machine may not be all that it takes. And I say that with some trepidation. I want to protect my daughter's right to enjoy the things I enjoyed when I was growing up in the 60s, 70s, and 80s. Along those lines, joining us on the phone right now is Mr. Ted Lewis, I hope. This is Ted Lewis, right?
Yeah, Tom, that's me.
Okay, I'm Rama.
I'm here. I like your show already.
Great. Well, I'm Rama. I'm sitting in for Tom today.
Excuse me.
That's okay. Unfortunately, you got the second stringer here. You didn't get the real pro. He kind of makes me sit in here when he's got a he's off. Tom's actually off taking part in a documentary about global warming. They're doing some filming around here. And
bless his heart.
Yeah. Well, I'll tell you, Tom's an incredibly, incredibly intelligent guy, very wise, very experienced. And I consider him, if you look up brilliant as far as how it applies intellectually, look it up in the dictionary. That's the definition I apply to Tom. And I don't use that word lightly on people. So, plus he's my boss. I got to say this; it's on the script in front of me. So,
okay. Well, what can I do for you this morning?
Well, real quick here, Mr. Lewis, Ted. I'll call you Ted if that's okay.
Please go ahead.
Program director of the Fair Elections Project at Global Exchange, a veteran human rights campaigner who spent the last 20 years supporting pro-democracy, human rights, and social justice struggles around the world. Is that accurate?
Well, I'd like to think so.
Okay. Well, then you're the man we want to talk to then. Okay. I appreciate that. We're going to talk a little bit about elections and the possibility of having this international monitoring going on in the U.S. electoral process. But before we get to that, if I could, Ted, because it says here you've recently actually been over in Israel, I guess, in the Israeli-occupied territories?
Well, a couple of years ago I was, yeah.
Okay, yeah, it's okay, 2002. What I want to ask is this, and it has to do with the elections. Mm-hmm. Right-wing Democrat James Carville, and there's some things I like about James Carville, a lot of things I don't. These are a couple things I don't like about him, but
okay.
James Carville went over to Israel and worked on the Sharon prime minister campaign when he was running for prime minister in Israel.
Uh-huh.
And then James Carville also went down in Venezuela and worked on the anti-Chavez campaign,
right,
down in Venezuela. And
he also worked for the pre-campaign in Mexico, just for the record.
Oh, okay. Well, that even brings it to a wider point. And I don't want to just point specifically at Carville on this, because there's a lot of hired political guns running around, and he's not the only one that does this. I'm just using this as an example. My question, Ted, are we exporting bad electoral processes, or are we importing them?
Well, I don't think a whole lot of either one is going on. The one thing that the United States might be taking the task for in terms of its export of democratic practices would be that it often uses elections in situations where political legitimacy is not established and that there's a lot of violence going on.
Right.
But unfortunately, all too often, to support as in with the junta in El Salvador and whatnot, elections were used as a way to suppress dissent rather than to give full expression. At the same time, it must be said that at this point, elections are working pretty well in Central America. So, I think that what the United States does export in some cases are ironies and hypocrisies, because, for example, the kind of electoral export product that we had during the 1990s and earlier in the 80s was one that said election systems should be set up in a modern way, everybody should have equal access, there should be transparency, a level playing field, nonpartisan administration of elections, and then that's where the car screeches, right? You're like, nonpartisan administration of elections, what does that mean? The Carter Center, for example, which is a non-governmental organization,
right,
looks at elections overseas from the point of view of a group that says you have to have minimum conditions in place before you can have elections. One of those minimum conditions is independent oversight of the election administration. Do we have that in the United States? Absolutely not. We have a highly partisan administration of elections, and in kind of civic good times, that usually hasn't been nearly as much of a problem as it is when you have a highly polarized, very close electorate where shenanigans have the potential to make a really big difference.
Well, let me ask you then, Ted, and I'm glad you actually brought Carter up, because that's a nice segue, because actually Carter himself has stated publicly that there's issues of great concern, specifically down in Florida, that I've seen him refer to. What is it about our electoral process that we supervise elections with in the United States that isn't bipartisan? Because I guess, just to throw in what I'm looking for here, here in Vermont, we elect our local justices of the peace, and, you know, they're elected by party affiliation. And the justices of the peace, both Democrats and Republicans and independents and whoever else happens to be in the mix there, go, for instance, and count the ballots together. That's supposed to keep anybody from being able to cheat.
Right. And in Vermont, you've got the great advantage of, you know, in general, the guy lives just down the street. And if he screws around too much, people are going to go to his house and, like, have it out with him, tell him what, you know, give them a piece of their minds.
Yeah.
But you know, out in the nation at large, the kind of civic bonds that you folks have managed to hold together to a certain extent, you know, due to accidents of geography and whatnot, they're asunder. And
right,
that's where it gets really dangerous to have partisan election administration. Let me just give you an example.
Okay.
In the state of Missouri, which is my home state, there's the person who is in charge at the state level of administering elections, and there's no federal authority that's over them, because there is no federal election administration authority. Some people get confused about that, but that doesn't exist in the United States. There's
right,
no central electoral authority. So the state official and final, you know, arbiter of electoral administration is the Secretary of State.
Right.
This year, the Secretary of State in Missouri is a man named Matt Blunt, a Republican official, who is actually kind of suffering a disadvantage from this year, perhaps, because he's running for governor as the Republican candidate for governor. Hence, he's administering his own election.
Oh, no problem
governor
there.
Now, you know, when we had international election officials over to the United States, as we did 3 weeks ago, people who are the top administrators for electoral systems in places like South Africa, people who have experience in election observation, in one case up to 60 different countries, they take a look at that, and it's almost laughable to them that in the United States, which is, you know, just money-wise, the greatest exporter of democracy, we put, you know, millions of dollars into telling other people how to do it,
yeah.
And in the United States, we have, this kind of system where, as they put it, the possibility of a perception of a conflict of interest is certainly there.
Now, and I just can't help but I remember all of the comments that were especially made in this whole Venezuela attempt at recalling Chavez, where essentially these U.S.-funded democracy groups, I can't think of the names of them offhand, but the National Democracy Project, something like that.
Well, there's the International Republican Institute,
yeah.
The National Democratic Institute,
yeah.
And they tend to be the ones that are kind of straight up government funded.
Yeah, those were the ones I was trying to think of, and they were down there complaining about how Chavez had too much influence on the election process down in Venezuela. So I find that kind of funny myself.
Well, fortunately, Jimmy Carter and some very honest people went down there, and one of the things that was kind of alarming about the Chavez election was the use of polling information to try and manipulate public sentiment. There were phony polls that were released on the day of the election by the opposition, those trying to defeat Chavez, that showed, supposedly, allegedly, these were exit polls, which showed the opposition surging ahead and beating Chavez.
Yeah.
And that was a cynical attempt to create a public climate of violence.
Okay.
That's my opinion. And watching that come out, it really worries me because, as I was saying before, not to beat a dead horse, but civic trust and civic bonds in the United States have eroded very badly.
Right.
And
right.
So the idea of just working on the process issues of let's have transparency, let's have a level playing field, let's make sure that there's independent electoral oversight, going beyond bipartisan, because bipartisan means there's always a fight.
Right, yep.
So what you've seen, for example, in Florida, is that there are amazing attempts at reform. People on the ground in Florida understand what it would take to make a level system, one that would operate at the benefit of the people, as opposed to one, that puts like a confusing process between the people making their choice and the implementation of it at the government level. I mean, that's all screwed up. The Electoral College and whatnot makes it all very complicated. And in Florida, you have 67 different counties administering elections.
Well, and then
depending on who got elected in that county, that's who runs it. So it's all based on a partisan form of administration. Hence, when you're trying to implement reforms, it gets very gummy.
Right. Okay. Now,
very gummy.
Ted, you mentioned just a bit ago that there were some people that had come in and started or had already been in the States looking at our electoral system.
That's right.
Who are they, and what were they looking at?
They're a group of electoral experts, election administrators, retired parliamentarians, former government ministers, that sort of level of folk from five different continents who accepted our invitation to come at their own expense. I mean, it was no payment for them, as there is in a lot of these, election observation situations that you read about. They did it completely voluntarily out of the kind of democratic goodness of their hearts. Came over here and went with us to Washington D.C., where they got a briefing from the various federal entities that have to do with the election.
Okay.
As I mentioned, there's no election oversight, but there is.
Let me stop you for a moment here. We're
money by the FEC and whatnot. So they met with all the groups in Washington D.C. who have to do with that, and a lot of groups from civil society, and split up to five states.
Okay, Ted, we're up on a hard break here.
I guess I better let the dog in.
Like the small dog that rules the house, Small Dog Electronics is the small computer company that really rules when it comes to customer service.
Small Dog Electronics is your authorized Apple reseller in Wakefield, Vermont. Sure, you can buy your computer out of a catalog, but how do you know you're really getting what you want or what you need? At Small Dog, they don't work on commission. Their only motivation is making sure you're a happy customer. Put your business on the leading edge with the world's fastest computer, the new Macintosh G5. You'll finish the job ahead of the pack, and automatic security updates lock out viruses. That's speed and dependability that will keep you focused on your customers instead of sitting on hold with tech support.
I guess you want to get on the couch, huh?
Like the small dog who everybody makes room for, Small Dog Electronics is big on customer service. Small Dog Electronics. Check them out on the web at smalldog.com or at their showroom on Route 100 in Waitsfield.
No way. You're not getting on the bed.
If it weren't for In These Times, I'd be a man without a country, says author Kurt Vonnegut. For more than 27 years, the progressive news magazine In These Times has provided groundbreaking coverage of movements for social, environmental, and economic justice. It is the publication the scholar and activist Cornel West calls the most creative and challenging news magazine of the American left. In These Times features award-winning reporting and analysis of national and international news. Turn to In These Times for stories on civil liberties, the environment, labor, feminism, and much more. Writer Barbara Ehrenreich put it this way: to people who say they are sick of the corporate-dominated and celebrity-fixated media, I say, stop whining and subscribe to In These Times. Find In These Times on your newsstand or visit us online at www.inthesetimes.com or call 1-800-827-0270. That's 1-800-827-0270.
Can you imagine a world in which all kids live healthy, safe, productive, and prosperous lives? Well, that world is within our grasp, and there's a way to reach it. It's called Ecolonomics. And to learn more, just pull up DennisWeaverNow.com and learn how to get a free report of our Ecolonomics educational program and how together we can build a world of prosperity without pollution. DennisWeaverNow.com. DennisWeaverNow.com. DennisWeaverNow.com.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. All of the attention given to Halliburton and their no-bid contract in Iraq would make you think that it is not a regular practice. But a new report from the Center of Public Integrity reveals that at least $362 billion was spent on no-bid contracts by the Pentagon since 1998. But the Pentagon did not stop there, rewarding $255 billion in cost-plus contracts that allow companies to spend as much as they deem necessary on a job, including an agreed-upon profit.
Are George Bush's policies getting you down? Have you had enough of Bush's messianic militarism? Does John Ashcroft's assault on the Bill of Rights scare you? Do you believe that Dick Cheney had his conscience surgically removed 3 decades ago? Are you angry at the Iraq fiasco that was the brainchild of Deputy Secretary of Defense Paul out of his Wolfowitz? Well, then subscribe to the Progressive Magazine. You'll get the insights of Barbara Ehrenreich, the inspiration of Howard Zinn, and the mirth of Molly Ivins, Will Durst, and Kate Clinton. They'll help you survive this dark age. And check this out. You can subscribe today for only $12 for 12 monthly issues. Simply get on the web and go to www.progressive.org or call 1-800-827-0555 and mention offer radio. That's 1-800-827-0555 and mention the radio offer from the Tom Hartman Program. That's the Progressive. It's your antidote to reactionary policies.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Levon likes his money.
All right, Levon likes his money. He likes his fancy clothes. All right, no, I'm not going to start singing. I'm going to spare all of you that. Rama Schneider sitting in for Tom Hartman. And let's get right on back to our guest because we also have somebody that wants to talk to him on the phone lines here. This is Ted Lewis. He's program director of the Fair Elections Project at Global Exchange. Right before we went into the break, Ted, you were telling us about the people that came from overseas, and they were looking at some of our electoral process, and you were talking about a little bit what they saw and what they've
right.
got to say.
They went to Florida, they went to Missouri,
Ted!
They went to Arizona.
Ted, slow down for a second. I want you to go quickly here because Dave from Humboldt County wants to talk to you too, okay?
Okay.
All right, so take a minute. Tell us real quick what they did, and let's get to Dave. And then
okay, I just want to say, if you want to find out what they did, it's fortuitous that we're talking today because a report on what they did in those five states is coming up on the website, our website, fairelection.us.
Fair Election.
Fair Election, one election, fairelection, singular.us.
Okay, so that's two websites for people to go to, fairvote.org and fairelection.org.
.us.
I'm sorry. Fairelection.us.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Go on. They got to five states. What were the states?
They went to Florida. They went to Ohio. They went to Missouri. And they'll go back to those states a week and a half from now, just before the election.
Okay.
They were also in Arizona and Georgia. And what they were looking for were they were looking around three basic questions. The concerns that have been expressed about the security of the electronic balloting systems. They were looking at questions that have been raised about disenfranchisement, specifically felony disenfranchisement, but the many ways primarily, you know, well, there the disenfranchisement of large sections of the population, which disproportionately disenfranchises poor and minority people.
Okay.
And also at the question of how does big money influence our political system. And they did this from a very professional point of view. And so the conclusions you'll see in the report are in very kind of quiet, well thought out language, but I think they're results and their call for observers in our election, international and domestic observation, and to start a culture of transparency where not just the parties are represented at the table, but all the people,
okay,
including that large segment of the population that are independent voters or don't want to be affiliated with the party. They, too, have a right to have a clean election system. So that's
I think
some
fair
pretty conclusions they've gotten. I'd like to talk with guy from Humboldt.
Yeah, that's at fairelection.us, though. They can see that report, right?
Absolutely.
Okay.
And it should be there end of day or tomorrow.
Okay. Here's Dave from Humbug County, California. Hey, Dave, come on in. What you doing, man?
Hey, good morning, gentlemen. Ted, you're doing a real good thing there, I think. Time is running out.
Thank you.
One thing I think is very important is that those voting machines that are used that do not have paper trails, we need to be able to keep those votes separate so we can see if those machines are going in a totally different direction than the paper trail voting. I think they will want to commingle and scramble the vote so you can't tell from which they came, but we need to be able to see if these machines are kicking out a different product than the rest of it. Am I making sense?
Absolutely. You're making sense. I think there's going to be, you know, a lot of people looking at sort of parallel monitoring on those things. It's going to be very hard. At the end of the day, if the elections are as close as they were in 2000, there's going to be a number of counties where the legal dispute has already started around that. And you know, but I absolutely, you know, endorse your idea of trying to keep a close look on it, because that's the only possibility to kind of reduce the harm of having a fundamentally unverifiable system as part of our electoral process. I mean, it's a bad idea. Whether on a technical level it's functioning correctly, there's just so many points of doubt and possible entry of bad information that it's just something that shouldn't be out there. I think a consensus has developed for a return to a paper ballot. No matter how the election comes out, I think people have to stay strong on that and push to make sure that every county in the United States has a verifiable paper record of every vote cast.
Yeah, if you can't recount it, you can't count it.
Okay, Dave, thanks a lot for the call. We got to get out of here. Ted, I want to thank you very much for taking your time out to talk to us. It's been great.
You.
All right, you have a great day. Rama Schneider in for Tom Hartman.
At last, there's a positive focus on a condition that affects millions. Read The Edison Gene, ADHD and the Gift of the Hunter Child by Tom Hartman, best-selling author of Attention Deficit Disorder, A Different Perception. John Rady, author of User's Guide to the Brain, says this about the Edison Gene.
Once again, with tireless scholarship and a bit of poetry, Tom Hartman helps take us to the edge of knowing ourselves, our brains, and our world.
The Edison Gene, available in bookstores everywhere.
Pop and not-so-pop culture, democracy, and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
And I'm Doug Cunningham.
The Wisconsin AFL-CIO presented a report to journalists Tuesday detailing manufacturing job losses in the state. The study comes on the heels of similar reports in Washington, Ohio, and Pennsylvania. The report finds that between January 2001 and May 2004, 61% of the layoffs by Wisconsin manufacturers were trade-related. Since 2001, 1 in 9 of Wisconsin's manufacturing jobs have disappeared. Milwaukee, the Fox River Valley, and Janesville are areas of the state hit hardest by the current trade policies. Bob Bowe, executive director of the AFL-CIO Industrial Union Council, said that the report is the first ever to rely on publicly reported official data to measure trade-related job losses. He says that the study is powerful evidence that current trade policies are hurting America's working families. Detailed information on job losses in America and which companies are shipping jobs overseas can be found at www.workingamerica.org.
As many as 60,000 students in the Chicago area found a substitute teaching their classes this week as 500 full-time teachers at the 7 Chicago City colleges went on strike. The Cook County College Teachers Union called the strike in response to administrators' efforts to increase their workload by one class per semester and 40 additional students with no overtime pay. The Cook County College Board is also seeking to increase health care costs by 400% and replace full-time teachers hiring more part-time faculty. Union members say they'll continue to walk picket lines until they receive a fair 4-year contract. Outsourcing is a bigger problem in America than first thought. Officially, the Bureau of Labor Statistics says just over 4,600 private sector jobs in companies with 50 or more workers were lost to outsourcing in the first quarter of this year. But two labor experts say the total is really much higher. Stephanie Luce with the University of Massachusetts Amherst and Kate Bronfenbrenner at Cornell say the total is closer to 400,000 jobs by the end of this year. The two prepared a report for a bipartisan congressional group investigating outsourcing. Not only are many more jobs actually being exported, but more white-collar, information tech, and call center jobs are now leaving the country compared to 2001, when most outsourced jobs were blue-collar.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. After 30 years of improvement, leading indicators show a worsening environmental trend over the last 4 years. Statistics show that civil citations issued to polluters fell 57%. Criminal pollution prosecutions dropped 17%. Cleanups of toxic waste down by 52%. Fish consumption warnings for rivers doubled. Beach closing up 26%. Asthma attacks increased by 6%. On the bright side, greenhouse gas emissions were reduced by 0.5%.
You've been listening to WIN, Workers' Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
This is the Democracy Zone with Tom Hartman.
The term winter soldier is a play on words of Thomas Paine's in 1776 when he spoke of the sunshine patriot and summertime soldiers who deserted at Valley Forge because the going was rough. And we who've come here to Washington have come here because we feel we have to be winter soldiers now. We could come back to this country and we could be quiet. We could hold our silence. We could not tell what went on in Vietnam. But we feel because of what threatens this country, the fact that the crimes threaten it, not reds and not redcoats, but the crimes which we're committing are what threaten it. And we have to speak out.
And that's John Kerry from 1971, ladies and gentlemen. That could be said today with just the exact same amount of certitude and correctness beyond a shadow of a doubt. Rama Schneider sitting in for Tom Hartman about 26 minutes before the top of the hour. And for the rest of the show here, folks, no guests to get in the way of our little interpersonal fun, you, me, the phones, and the rest of the world. 1-866-889-8894. You want to join in the fun. And it's, you know what's so great when you talk about the elections and you talk about the voting, you really find out there are things you can do. And our voting process, as many flaws as it might have, is not near the worst in the world. It could be incredibly worse. It's a good thing we don't go to Canada for flu shots. Oh, wait a minute. We do go to Canada now for flu shots. That's right. The Bushies, who first, I guess, were told back in the summer of 2003 that there was something amiss at Chiron's England plant that was producing half of our, approximately half of our nation's flu shot, flu vaccine. The Bush administration sent the FDA over there. Apparently, somehow they got a clean bill of health. And it wasn't until the Brits went in and took a look in October and said, hey, no. Your whole manufacturing facility has got to be shut down. Bad flu vaccine, bad flu. And then all of a sudden we find out that, well, hey, guys, whoops. You only got about half the expected amount of flu vaccine running around the United States. Of course, the British managed for some magical way, managed to go ahead and find other sources so that they could make up for their shortfall. But George Bush, who finds it so abhorrent that people might want to go to Canada for reimportation or for other pharmaceuticals for medical needs, because, of course, you know, it's all these dead Canadians up there from taking bad pharmaceuticals. I mean, we see them on the news. No, we don't. I'm sorry. I'm hallucinating again. It's kind of like Americans don't need to go to Canada for flu shots. Well, all right. Actually, they're doing it. With a shortage of flu vaccine across the country, according to the AP, Margaret Holman and others from Powers Lake Senior Citizens Center have been talking about going to Canada for their shots. Clinics and pharmacies across the border are offering to inoculate U.S. residents, and Holman said she planned to call clinics in Estevan, Saskatchewan, if she cannot get a flu shot in North Dakota this week. Is that reimportation if you go up to Canada and get your flu vaccine and then you come back to your home in the States, or do you have to, like, stay out of the country until the flu vaccine has lost its efficacy before you can come back across the border? I don't know, but damn those Canadians anyway. You know, isn't it so inconvenient having somebody like that north of the border who not only does things cheaper, but they're also willing to pick up the slack when our more expensive, less efficient process for all these vaccines comes into play. Damn you, Canada! Damn you! Well, what can I say? George Bush, of course, you know, I'm surprised they didn't jump all over this one in the news. But, of course, they wouldn't, because the news being rather right-wing. The whole massive media. I mean, Sinclair is not an anomaly. Sinclair is the status quo of the massive media nowadays. So, I don't know. Okay. Well, let's take some phone calls here. We got, what do we got? Ann from Sarasota, Florida. How are you doing today, Ann?
Fine, other than I'm sick to death of seeing Catherine Harris ads on TV.
Oh, you poor...
I'm in her district.
I feel so sorry for you.
I try to turn them off, but sometimes I'm just not fast enough.
Oh, it must be horrible.
Well, she's another one using the tactics that Bush uses, that I don't have a record of my own to run on, so let's trash the competition.
Well, you know, it's better than nothing. What can you say?
I think nothing would be better, but that's not why I called.
Okay.
I caught the thing coming in, the intro with Carrie speaking from back in the 70s.
That was 1971, yeah.
Right. My whole take on this thing is that it takes more of a man, and whether I agree or disagree with what he did, I respect John Kerry for going to the war that he didn't believe in, fighting, serving, and then coming back and saying, hey, you're doing something wrong here. I disagree with what you're doing, and I think you should know this. It takes a lot of guts to be the whistleblower.
Yes.
And what I'm seeing in this, since Bush has been in office and the Republican far right has taken control of things, and including the media, is that the whistleblowers used to be the ones that we held up as heroes. You know, like what happened, I can't remember that, the movie that Cher did about the lady that exposed the nuclear power plants and their unsafe you know, actions and stuff like that. But those were the heroes. Now
yep.
they're making the heroes, the whistleblowers, into the enemy and saying anything that is away from our corporate ideals is bad.
Yep.
You're all bad. You're evil. And it's scary to me. It's almost like they're a corporate cult.
Well, you might. It's an interesting point. I've got to chew on that idea myself because I think maybe in a cult process, you're right. I mean, 4, 8, or 10 years ago, when Wesley Clark, but I don't mean him. I mean the other Clark, who wrote the book and came out of the Bush administration, the terrorism guy. When he came out and spoke publicly, at once upon a time, we all would have been like, you're our hero, you're a great man, but yet he was so demonized by at least half the country, if not more. There were a lot of people that just felt uncomfortable having a whistleblower of his integrity and his being so high up the ladder come out. So, you know, you're right. They want to do away with whistleblowers.
And that is a big problem with me because the whistleblowers are the one that keeps people honest.
Yep. Well,
Other quick thing, if I could, just very quickly,
okay.
is about this, what all's going on in the media and stuff that I'm seeing with Bush, and they're showing all these polls with Bush leading, and they keep trying to say Bush is leading. Of course, every other poll comes out says he's not.
Yeah.
Is that I encourage everybody to get out there and vote, no matter what your polls are telling you, get out there and vote. Try to do it as best you can. I know with all the crap that they're doing in Florida, it's going to be really hard to get our votes counted.
Yeah.
They're doing so many things to try to keep us out. But I really think that if we show up in overwhelming numbers, they're going to have to give the election to the properly elected candidate, which I believe will be Kerry.
There you go, Ann. Well said.
Okay.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Have a great day, Ann. And, you know, Ann is really right, and this is probably the only thing that the politicians aren't yanking our leg on. In the end, there's only one poll that's going to count, and that's the poll that counts the votes. However they're counted, it's the poll that's going to count the votes that count. So you got to get out there. You got to vote. Do the best you can. Look, you know, empowerment, ladies and gentlemen, this is very serious. Empowerment does not mean that you win. Empowerment means you do the best that you can under the circumstances. 1-866-889-8894. Ed from California is on the phone with us. How you doing, Ed?
Hey, pretty good.
Great.
Amen about your voting. But there's another thing going on. We're talking about John Kerry and his, you know, his saying what was going on in the war.
Yep.
We got 19 service people that are going to be railroaded for their stand of what went on with Iraq just this past week or so.
You're talking about the ones that refused to take the
refused to go,
north?
And they find out, and I heard on the news the other night, they've been arrested, they're going to prosecute them, they're going to do whatever they got to do to, push it under the carpet. The same thing happened in 1944. I don't know if you've ever heard of Port Chicago in Northern California.
Yeah, that's where they wouldn't load the ammunition ships.
And what happened there? The ships exploded,
yep.
They leveled the town and everything else.
Yep.
But the guys still went to jail.
Yeah, yeah.
We can't let this happen to the 19 people who were smart enough to say we need to change it.
Okay, Ed, I want to say something, and I want to say it while you're on the phone because I want to give you a chance to lay into me for the comment, just to balance it out here, especially because my honest opinion is these guys should have gone, they should have followed their orders because them not going meant somebody else went in their place. Tear into me on that, and then we'll call it a day.
It can't be. You know, it's supposed to be an army of one. You make your own decisions. The Nuremberg trials. We have to respect service people who have an opinion. We can't just be one person, one mind. That's mindlessness. And when the people who are running these governments and running the thing, what about Pork Chop Hill? What about Hamburger Hill?
Yep. Yep.
We need people who stick up, and we got to stop mocking them.
Yep.
Do we lay into the Iraqi army because, well, they should have stuck up and said, no, we're not going to fight for Saddam Hussein?
Yep.
Oh, no, that's wrong.
Yeah. No, well, in that case, yeah, we expected them to put down, yeah.
Yeah, but right. When it's our government, yeah. No, you just go and you die.
Okay, I understand your point. I actually, in this particular case, I disagree with it, but I wanted to give you a chance to counter what I was going to say, so I'll leave it at that. Thanks a lot for the
appreciate
call,
it.
Ed.
Bye.
You have a great day.
Same to you.
Absolutely. I mean, we might as well. It's the only day we get today. If you don't have a good one today, you don't get do-overs. Mulligans and golf only. And in presidential elections, I guess, too. You know, or presidential selections anyway. They give you a mulligan. Anyway, 1-866-889-8894. Oh, man. These conservatives are just not good people. I got to tell you. They're just not. They're weasels. They're horrible. Here's another. This is a, what's this, an AP Wire story. I can't read too much because it's hot off the press. So, you know, if I use too much of it, I go beyond fair use. But this will give you the idea why they're so horrible. A conservative U.S. lawyer's attempt to enlist the Vatican in his drive to declare Senator John Kerry a heretic over his abortion views backfired Wednesday, when the Holy See said it had been hoodwinked. I guess it's Mark Balastrieri, I think is how you'd pronounce it. He's head of this Catholic group called DeFide, been pushing for the church to rule. Kerry has inflicted excommunication on himself because he supports a woman's right to control her own body. And apparently Balastrieri caused a stir in the U.S. when he asserted in interviews and on his website he had won an unofficial and indirect green light from the Vatican. But the Vatican denied his assertions. And, you know, they'll lie about anything. They'll just lie about anything. And the sorry thing is, look, when I get down on conservatives and Republicans, I don't mean all people who consider themselves a political conservative or consider themselves a Republican. I think there's the hacks, the people that get out front of any movement. There's the gadflies, there's the well-known figures, they get out front. These are the people that you're defining when you talk. And you know, the people out front for the Republican Party nowadays are the biggest bunch of weasels, lying little weasels who don't care about our country, bar nothing. I mean, they'll even lie about the Vatican, for gosh sakes. And, of course, don't forget, George Bush was over asking the Vatican a couple months ago for help in his election. He wanted the Vatican to get on the case of all these Catholics in the United States to get them to vote for Bush. Jesus, they're horrible. But I know a lot. I'll tell you the truth. I've got neighbors. I've got people that I know and I like and I respect and I trust my daughter. I'd leave a wallet with a gazillion billion dollars in it sitting on their kitchen table and not come back for it for a couple days because I'd know it all be there. They're fantastic people who are Republicans. But the problem is these normally fantastic people, when a bunch of Republicans get together, it's the things that they make the compromises on. It's the things they're willing to do to be together as a group that comes out and just basically demeans the rest of humanity. Sure, let's make up stories about the Vatican. Why not? How about this? A Lakewood Republican stealing campaign signs late one night got nabbed when he ran across a low-hanging driveway chain, fell face first onto a pilfered sign and the concrete, knocked himself unconscious. Good for him. Randall Wagner, 50 years old, taken by ambulance, treated at a medical center, gets arrested for stealing Democratic signs. He's being driven around by his wife in a pickup truck. They had a pickup truck load of them. Why didn't they arrest his wife? They didn't arrest his wife. Rama Schneider in for Tom Hartman on the Tom Hartman Radio Show.
Bonjour. My name is Michel, and I founded the Organic Wine Company with my sister 25 years ago. If you love wine and have not tried our French wines yet, you are in for a treat. Nowadays, people everywhere are buying organic fruits and vegetables because they know they taste better. Organic grapes are so luscious that when turned into wine, you can really taste the difference. Our wines are delicious and eco-friendly, so I want to make it very easy for you to try them out. Call me right away at 1-888-ECO-WINE and I will send you three of my favorite organic French wines at half their regular price. That's just $25 plus shipping. C'est magnifique! And if you don't agree, I will gladly refund your money. So take me up on my offer and call me right away at 1-888-ECO-WINE, which is E-C-O-W-I-N-E. Au revoir.
Visit iowapeace.com for books on justice and peace. The Last Liberal Outlaw is Mike Palasek's new novel. Chuck Gregory with BlueEar.com had this to say. Palasek is at his best when writing about small-town America. It's a place he clearly loves, even as he pokes fun at its quirks and reveals the sickness that lies just below the surface. It's a place he knows, and he shares his knowledge in delightfully original ways, even as he cries out for change. We haven't had a writer like Palasek since Kurt Vonnegut was at his peak. Mike is an Iowa author, former federal prisoner for peace, small-town newspaper reporter, seminarian, and nominee for the U.S. House of Representatives in the Iowa Democratic Party 2000 election. For more information and more about Mike's other novels, visit iowapeace.com. The revolution won't be televised, but you can read about it. The Last Liberal Outlaw, A New American Revolution, is happening in the heartland.
Hi, I'm David Orrick. In vacuums, bagless is a dirty word. A leading consumer testing magazine warns, if you're sensitive to dust, avoid bagless vacuums. And if you own one, they advise you to wear a dust mask. I would never put the Oric name on a bagless vacuum. They're filthy. My hypoallergenic Oric XL uses triple-walled, disposable filter bags. They hold four times more than the leading brand of bagless vacuums. What goes in the Oric bag stays in the bag, including bacteria and viruses. Empty a bagless vacuum, and the dust goes right back into the room you've just cleaned. Is this sanitary? Oric cleans the air as it vacuums the floor. Try my 8-pound Oric XL risk-free for 30 days. Call 1-800-989-4200, 1-800-989-4200. It's the clean alternative to bagless vacuums.
A California researcher examines the connection between air pollution and dairy cows. I'm Richard Hoops for Earthwatch Radio. New legislation in California requires some dairy farmers to control emissions from their herds of cows, and the law is controversial. Many people think the state government has overstated the impact of cows on air quality. Frank Mittliner wants to get a better understanding of just what is in dairy air. Mittliner is an air quality specialist with the University of California at Davis.
Right now, the so-called emission inventories in California put the cows as number two, only surpassed by cars as a pollutant source. And many people have their doubts that that's the case.
Mittliner says big problems with air pollution from dairy herds involve gas and dust. The animal waste can release various gases, including ammonia, and dust often comes from dried-out manure that gets kicked up by the cows themselves. Mittliner wanted to study air emissions around cows in a setting that's typical for a dairy operation, so he built four structures that look like greenhouses with dirt floors, and each one encloses a herd of 10 heifers. Now he's monitoring the air that comes in and goes out of each structure while the cows go about their regular business.
We measured the incoming air and the outgoing air, and therefore we can determine everything that is produced by cows and their waste by means of air emissions.
As Mittliner and his colleagues monitor their small herds, they'll get a better understanding of what kind of air pollution and how much of it comes from cows. Mittliner says the findings will be released early next year. He says they should provide a more current and accurate assessment of what dairy cows contribute to regional air pollution. Earthwatch Radio is a service of the Sea Grant Program and the Gaylord Nelson Institute at the University of Wisconsin.
Thank you.
democracy to the United States of America. Here's Tom Hartman.
So a new man in the White House with a familiar name said he had some fresh ideas, but it's worse now since he came from Texas.
All right, welcome back. Tom Hartman radio program. Rama Schneider sitting in for Tom. He will be back with everybody, bright-eyed and bushy-tails tomorrow. Did you know that? Tom's got a bushy tail. Yes, he does. Tom used to be a Playboy bunny. He never stopped wearing the suit. That's what... I shouldn't... I'm sorry, Tom. No, I didn't say that. My check's at home. All right. I don't know if Tom mentioned this one yesterday or not, but I want to make mention of it because this is another important one. In the L.A. Times yesterday, Robert Scheer wrote a column... The 9/11 secret in the CIA's back pocket. The agency is withholding a damning report that points at senior officials. It is shocking, Mr. Scheer writes. The Bush administration is suppressing a CIA report on 9/11 until after the election. Well, hey, can you believe that? And this one names names. Although the report by the Inspector General's Office of the CIA was completed in June, it has not been made available to the congressional intelligence committees that mandated the study almost 2 years ago. And it's infuriating that a report which shows that high-level people were not doing their jobs in a satisfactory manner before 9/11 is being suppressed, an intelligence official who has read the report told Mr. Scheer, adding that the report is potentially very embarrassing for the administration because it makes it look like they weren't interested in terrorism before 9/11. Or, gee, here's a big shocker, in holding people into government responsible afterwards. Can you believe that? Now, come on. Of course they were interested in terrorism before 9/11, I think maybe sort of. Wasn't that what that vacation was? Oh, no, that was golfing, that August golfing. How many people have come out now and said that they just really weren't paying attention to terrorism? And what high-level official lost their Bush administration job due to not being better prepared for something like the attacks of September 11th, 2001. Which official? It's just unreal. It's just unreal. You have Mr. Slam Dunk get in there. Slam Dunk Tenet. He's called a great CIA director on his way out the door by our illustrious President George Bush. Nobody. George Bush, what was his mistakes? Oh, some people that he appointed. Some people. We need accountability, ladies and gentlemen. It's up to us. It's not up to them to give it to us. It's up to us to take it. Rama Schneider in for Tom Hartman. That's the show. Thanks to Ira. Thanks to me. Thanks to Tom. Thanks to Louise. Thanks to everybody out there listening. Bye now.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
Visit iowapeace.com for books on justice and peace. The Last Liberal Outlaw is Mike Palasek's new novel. Chuck Gregory with BlueEar.com had this to say. Palasek is at his best when writing about small-town America. It's a place he clearly loves, even as he pokes fun at its quirks and reveals the sickness that lies just below the surface. It's a place he knows, and he shares his knowledge in delightfully original ways, even as he cries out for change. We haven't had a writer like Palasek since Kurt Vonnegut was at his peak. Mike is an Iowa author, former federal